This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rowicki. You, thanks for joining us. Wednesday, hump day, middle of the week, playoffs abound. We're going to talk some NHL playoffs. We are going to get into Patrick Laine referendum from Hustler and Lawless yesterday afternoon. The Blue Jays lose, the Raptors win. Lots of hockey talk today, of course, and lots of stuff to give away in your phone calls on the Boston Pizza fan line. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Not too bad, man. Not too bad at all.
Excellent. Brandon?
I love the San Jose Sharks.
Woo!
Anytime you can get a up six rip in the second period and call her a night early, you're all right in my books, boys.
Now they lead the series 3-2.
They doubled down.
Double victory.
I like Connor McDavid. I like him saying that. Hey, you don't want to get two games for what beating us 7-0.
He sounded like he was almost asking it. Like, they don't get two games for that, right?
Yes. Just for confirmation, yeah. Your voice.
You know, there's been some amazing quotes from young players during the playoff series. Yesterday, Austin Matthews about the Capitals, paraphrasing, yeah, it has to be getting to him. This was supposed to be their year. And then Connor McDavid last night, making light of the fact that, and I don't mind that.
It's a little
bit
millennial,
good,
right? Like, it's respect? Yeah. No, like hierarchy? Yeah, no, that doesn't fall into place here. I'm going to speak my mind, mofo.
Don't get me started on these kids. Do not get me started on these kids. We will touch lots on the playoffs in this first hour, of course, and tee up tonight's games as well. But breaking news, as Brandon told you in SportsCenter off the top, former Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez, who scored a legal victory last week in a murder trial, committed suicide in prison last night, according to the Boston Globe, or at least earlier this morning. The Massachusetts Department of Correction issued a statement saying Hernandez was discovered hanging in his cell at the Sousa Baranowski Correctional Center in Shirley around 3:05 a.m. this morning. Quote, Mr. Hernandez was in a single cell in a general population unit. Mr. Hernandez hanged himself utilizing a bed sheet that he attached to his cell window. Mr. Hernandez also attempted to block his door from the inside by jamming the door with various items. He was transported to a nearby hospital where he was pronounced dead at 4:07 a.m. Eastern Time. State police are investigating the incident. Last week, Hernandez was acquitted of a double murder charge but was still serving life without parole for killing Odin Lloyd in 2013. Gentlemen, Aaron Hernandez commits suicide early this morning.
Yeah, and you know, we get paid to sit here and speak the way we really feel about things, and so there's no sense holding back at this point in time and being all PC about this. Aaron Hernandez commits suicide, and when you guys first told me, I said, good. Good. Another individual that I think the world's better off. Steve Stevens, Aaron Hernandez, both taking themselves out of this world. Hey, the world's a better place because of it. I got no problem with this. Wish it happened more often to such individuals.
Wow. Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the whole...
Notice how I let you follow that?
Yeah, thanks. I get that kind of, I guess, cavalier justice in a way, almost type
feeling. Old Testament.
Yeah. It's just, the whole thing is just, it's just terrible from start to finish. I mean, never mind the fact that he was, you know, set up to be a superstar athlete, but, you know, a guy that, from what I understand, didn't grow up in a necessarily hard part of town, tough upbringing. Not that that's kind of a way out or a way of excusing anybody for that kind of behavior, but just... just a total waste of a life, really. That's what it comes down to. It was a waste of a life, and not only that, but you impact how many families because of it. And now there's a daughter growing up, you know, his daughter growing up without a father. a family that doesn't have their son, probably other families by the
accounts of
it.
I tell
you
what, brother, the daughter might be better off growing up without having to go to the pen to visit her dad for the next however long, serving a life sentence in the States. I don't know when he's eligible for pro and that sort of thing, but...
Yeah, he wasn't.
I can understand. I can even understand for using rational thought, right? Staying in the big house until you're in the grave or checking out early. I understand that. Who's worse off today? Even the daughter. Like, yeah, to me, it allows his immediate family to move on. This whole thing, right? So, it's a
crazy story. How a guy that has everything basically laid out for him to lead a comfortable, just easygoing life.
That's what happens when you're rotten inside, right?
I guess so.
You're rotten and ugly inside, it doesn't matter, all that stuff.
Yeah, you can't look at things from a rational point of view. It's sad for me that innocent families, maybe more so, just have everything taken away because of one just flat-out idiot.
And I'll tell you what, brother, if I was a... You know, I know he got off and they acquitted charge. It doesn't mean he's innocent. And whatever other struggles he imposed in situations where he imposed his will, including the murder that he was convicted of, those families, I would think, would be toasting this morning hearing this news.
My view on this is it's an all-round tragedy. And Aaron Hernandez, I put out a piece again. I retweeted it. The one piece of journalism I've probably retweeted the most and put out since 2013 is an article from Rolling Stone magazine titled Aaron Hernandez, the Gangster in the Huddle. Former Patriots tight end might have been one of the NFL's all-time greats, but he could never escape drugs, guns, and a life of violence. And it's not just the story of Aaron Hernandez that makes this great. It's the journalism involved in the piece that delves so far deep into his upbringing as a child, where he grew up. And Brandon's right. It's not like he was on the mean streets or anything like that. And it's not like he came from a very high-end neighborhood either. He was a very good athlete. Brought up by two parents, and I retweeted it again at Jim Tull Sports if you want to read it. The story of Aaron Hernandez is one from the get-go where, for whatever reason and his upbringing, he just simply wanted to be a gangster. And as his life unfolded through his athletic prowess and how good he was and how talented he was, he just always liked that lifestyle and wanted to go to it. And that's the people he surrounded himself with as a kid, even though some people tried to steer him in the right way, even though he got full ride scholarships that his choices in life almost cost him. Went to the University of Florida, draft picked by the Patriots, Super Bowls, big contracts, millionaire. And it's just a great piece of work. But I got to be honest, I go on my initial reaction when I hear this news, and I was stunned and shocked and a little saddened because I understand he's a murderer. I have no doubt in my mind that he's a murderer. And I think that he threw a life away that literally was harder to derail than it was to just accept being a superstar athlete. He went out of his way to actually throw his life away, so I don't feel sorry for him. But to get up and hear that, you know, he's committed suicide, I was shocked, I was stunned, and then I'm not surprised. And it is just a tragic end to an overall tragic story for all the families that he's hurt and for his own family that he's hurt as well. So it's a phenomenal read if you want to get into it and to see where he got to this point. Because that's the big question around him. When you're catching touchdowns in the National Football League on the New England Patriots, to how you get to this point, that's why I find it a great piece. But I understand your sentiment, Troy, and I think a lot of people will feel that way. I do not feel sorry for Aaron Hernandez in any fashion, but I do feel sorry for everybody involved that another life has been lost due to the Aaron Hernandez story, including his own, I guess.
No, I don't share that part with you. I don't see it as a sad thing in that manner. And you know what, man? You choose that life going to get you, right? You want to go be a gangster and all the rest of it, man, and all like live that sort of a life, embrace it, all the rest of that sort of crap, man, it's going to get you. Somewhere down the road, it's going to get you. And there's a lot of dudes like that I've been around, and not just in football, but quite likely, guys, because of how violent the game is, that attracts nasty cats like that, right? So there's a fair number of dudes that I've been around over the years that are just badasses kind of like that. And it's not, you know, the whole pro football glamour horse crap thing that society holds in such a high light, especially in the NFL, the way, like, a lot of dudes are like that, and they're just really talented at playing that one specific sport, and it gives them a bit of an outlet. Like, they're more the dude off the field than they are between the lines, man, right?
Oh, yeah, and I don't feel sorry for Aaron Hernandez. He made his own decision, and that's why this Rolling Stone article is so great, because it clearly goes – it just points out that day after day, year after year, this is the life he wanted. He wanted to be a gangster, and he got it. But I do feel sorry for his parents. I feel sorry for his family. I feel sorry for his daughter. Whether he's incarcerated for the rest of his life or not, that's still her dad. But in the bigger picture, you know, maybe in the end who knows? I'm not going to guess what he was thinking when he does something like this. But to go through a double murder trial to get through it and then do this, it's just a tragic story, is it not? Like, overall, in general, when anybody has all the gifts in the world to be a great person and athlete, not just athlete, but a great person, and this is the decisions they make.
You know what, man? You're talking to the wrong guy. As far as tragic stories, worked in social services for too long in this city, seen too much to consider this a tragic story. I think it's a good ending. This is a good ending to a wasted life.
And I do think it's tragic in that instead of hurting so many people, how many people could he have helped if he was, you know, on the right path? And I don't even think it was, you know, parents or family steering him the wrong way. It sounds like his brother is a decent human being. It's just sometimes, for whatever reason, some people are just bad people, and there's not really a whole lot else you can do about it. That's the sad thing to me, is that how many people could have been helped with the money, with the fame, all that sort of thing, but instead it just goes, it's just a gigantic waste. He just wasted so many things. That's what kind of bothers me about the whole situation.
And I mean, he's got parents that, even if he didn't do this, that have to walk around town. He's got a daughter that's never going to not be known as Aaron Hernandez's daughter. Like, that's the tragic part of this whole thing. And those are all his decisions. So, anyways, it was breaking news today. Aaron Hernandez is, and ironically today, the New England Patriots, and maybe he knew this, are on their way to the White House to celebrate their Super Bowl championship. And I presume there's still guys on that team that are friends or were friends with Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah. I don't know if he knew it or not. I doubt that it was part of his decision making.
So Aaron Hernandez has committed suicide 3:05 today, found hung in his cell or hanging in his cell. Pronounced dead 4:07 a.m. The former New England Patriot and convicted murderer just beat a double murder rap, but was doing a life sentence without parole for the murder of Odin Lloyd. Aaron Hernandez commits suicide early this morning. We'll take a break here on The Big Show, TSN 1290, and delve into the NHL playoffs when we come back 17 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Back on The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Don't forget, we have your next chance to qualify for the Ultimate Canadian Sports Tour coming up in the next hour. And TSN 1290 and Splatters Paintball want to help you wrap up your season in the most extreme way possible. Visit us online at TSN1290.ca and tell us about you and your team. Hockey, ringette, curling, whatever you represent in the way of sports, it's all good. We've collected the entries and will continue to do so right up until tomorrow, April the 20th, and then on this Friday, April the 21st, The Big Show will announce one winning team. That team will walk away with a wind-up party for 25 at Splatters Paintball, including rentals, game space, gear and ammo, and a pregame meal. Enter now at TSN1290.ca. Once again, we'll announce the grand prize winner of that on Friday. Jim Troy and Brandon on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Three playoff games last night in the National Hockey League. Where to start? The Sharks pound the Oilers for a two-game victory. Once they hit five goals, they got an extra one, Connor McDavid. We'll start with the Canadians and the Rangers. The Rangers eke out a 2-1 victory. Henrik Lundqvist was probably the best player on the ice, if not one of the top three. And they even this series at 2-2. Gentlemen, your thoughts on the Rangers and the Canadians battle last night?
All the concern, all the worry of the New York Rangers, huh? And there's been a pile of it, especially coming out of New York, of sort of dead in the water and, you know, the zero effort, zero punch, zero whatever you want to call it of Game 3, just to snap it all back. And I got to ask, who's 61 for the New York Rangers? Who's that guy?
Yeah.
I thought he's supposed
to... Is that Riley Nash of the Bruins?
Supposed to disappear come playoff time. A little bit of a beast. I don't know, somebody just took over his body, Mr. Nash, or what's going on there, but like all aggressive, knocking over price and stuff. That was a little bit wild to watch, but this is a series, baby. The Blue Shirts looked pretty good last night, and this is ain't no messing around. Now, if you're a Habs fan, that was a bit of a smack in the yap, and it just kind of shake your head and gain your feet and go, oh, baby, and this is now a best of three.
Yeah, the New York Rangers are officially the New York Jekyll and Hydes because – Game 3 looked like this was going to be a real short series, and what happened yesterday makes you think it could go the full distance. It's just teams like that are hard to get a grasp on, because when the Rangers are playing well, they're as tough to beat as anybody, but they just have these valleys where they're so awful, and they look like they don't even belong in the same building as some of these other teams. There was a couple of things that stood out for me from both sides, and I guess for the Rangers, they have I guess it all kind of came on one play. It was the lone Montreal goal. And from the Habs side, I know he kind of disappeared late in the game, but man, when Radulov's on, he's a load to handle. He really is. He's a fun cat to watch.
Do you re-sign him though? That to me is. I was in a discussion with a couple of rabid Habs fans last night and asking them that question. If you are in the chair of Bergevin, like a great deal, man, a fantastic signing this year, right? They got every cent out of him, but dare you now sign him to something long term, watch him relax and regress into what he was prior to this year. I wouldn't touch him. I want nothing to do with him six years.
Isn't this the prime example of fool me once,
sure
shame
is.
On you, fool yeah. me twice, shame on me?
Yeah.
I think if you're Montreal, just enjoy the ride.
Agreed.
Enjoy the ride.
Set him off
with
the sunset,
yeah, and if
right?
he has a great tenure with another team, then hey,
then,
good
then,
luck.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah.
Like,
you guys don't re-sign him?
I don't think so. To me, I'm right there with Wicks. Like, you got, you know, turning 31, he's going to get 5-6 years probably, right? Like, he's done this fantastic. But there have got to be a bunch of trigger scared teams out there going, like, this is a classic example. Sign a 1-year deal. You come play your butt off. And he looks like so engaged. Looks like such a great teammate, having fun out there. But I don't know, man. You sign the long, big, juicy deal, whatever it's going to be. 5-6 years, and there's a relax and a regression. I think you can smell it coming from a mile away.
Mm-hmm. I don't like it. I don't like it. And the other thing I didn't like is, so the goal happens there on a nice play from Weber, and Holden is, he looks like a beach whale out there. I don't know what he was doing on the 2-on-1. But then we see Henrik Lundqvist again with and you can hear like the on-ice mics pick up what he's yelling, obviously cursing at his teammates, and the head up in the air and the shoulders and the showing up of his team. I just wish somebody on his team just once would come
basically
over and smack him right in the head.
Yeah.
Like, what are you? Like, what the hell are you doing? And you just came off a year where your numbers were terrible in Henrik Lundqvist terms, and I didn't hear any teammates show you up. I didn't see anybody out on the ice point at you when you let in a softie. Mm-hmm. Like, for him to just constantly do that, it would really make me fairly happy. As much as I want to see him get a cup for a guy that talented, just love to see one of his defensemen come over there and just smack him right in the head.
Yeah, but isn't he a leader on the team? Like, he's one of the captains. Shouldn't he, like, when they don't play well, they didn't play well in Game 3. And if, like he said, he goes, I don't think we have to worry about Montreal. We have to worry about ourselves. We got to be better, and we got to take care of ourselves. And then you get into the game, and they're making mistakes again. Like my point is if that's Rick Nash, is it different? Because it's not the goalie. It's like a captain on the team.
Well, it's different because of, like, when you're doing it, you know, I think there's different ways to approach it. But when he's doing it specifically, he's dealing specifically with – whatever mistakes, or if it's a two-on-one in the first place, like if it goes in the net. And only there, like that's a sort of a results-based thing that he's getting upset at, right? If he makes a save, he's not freaking out on anybody, but because it goes in, everybody else is working their ass off, maybe a mistake is made. And like Wicks is saying, to me, in that position, there's a lot of similarities to me between place kicker and goalie, where those guys are out and they're in the war out there. They're doing their thing, battling like crazy. And even if you're a brilliant goaltender, to me, you got to be real careful on doing what Wicks is talking about and calling guys out, like, and basically humiliating them on the ice after a goal scored. I'm right there with Wicks. I'd love to see somebody go up and say something to him at some point in time. I think that's total BS what he's doing.
Well, that's interesting if there is that going on in the room at all, if somebody ever...
I don't mind it in the room, though, as much, though. Like if
but
Lundqvist...
just the feelings. See, I think, Jay, you're talking about lingering
feelings about it. Well, I mean, like, if it happens, and then in the room...
Oh, if someone
like
goes
if
after
go,
him.
Yeah,
well, I just mean on the ice. When you do something like that on the ice in front of everyone... Like, yeah. Do you think the guys in front of you are trying? Like, they're not trying to give up 2-on-1s. They're not trying to give up backdoor tap ins. For him to react the way he does, it just looks terrible. And yeah. I don't even care if you're a player or like. Could you imagine Blake Wheeler after, say, Hellebuck lets in a softie, skating up and throwing his arms in the air and
That's
screaming
exactly
at him?
What it's
it would
doing.
Be a terrible yeah. look. Player to goalie, goalie yeah. to player. Either way,
we have seen that though. Laine did that. Laine gave the old one hand.
After, well, that's I think that's after he
his
made a
turnover,
mistake.
Yeah, his
so I don't,
turnover.
I'm not
then
so sure that was
net,
to the goalie. But it's a rarity, and it's worthy of a shot to the app. I agree 100% with Wicks.
But it is interesting what his role is on that team in that room, because he's been there the longest, I think. And you know, when he does this, I think that he's feeling it. I think that he's
aware of.
Yeah, where he's at in his career and his age. And I like even last night when they got the win, the fist pumps and the leg and the, you know, like he was screaming, yeah, like over the win. When have you ever seen him do that? Like, I wonder if Henrik Lundqvist is feeling it a bit that, you know, we need to do this sort of this year because I don't know what's going to happen or where it's going, even though I've got a contract. Interesting stuff there.
And sadly, all it's going to is a dead end in round two if it happens that they happen to pull it off.
We'll get into the other two games in our next segment and, of course, tee up tonight's action. We do have game four, the Leafs and the Caps on TSN 1290. We'll talk about that more on The Big Show when we come back to TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca.
TSN 1290 and Glendale Golf and Country Club invite you to spend a big day out with The Big Show. You can enter now at tsn1290.ca for your chance to win golf outing for two with members of The Big Show. One winner will be selected every Friday to receive a tee time with two members of The Big Show for two people as well, so you can bring a friend. Cart rental and lunch and beverages at Glendale Golf and Country Club. Visit tsn1290.ca for more info and to enter now. I've been thinking about this, gentleman. I might pull out the old
easy
late 80s.
Okay.
Might pull out the old, it was like from Dewey Cox, walk hard, finish the sentence, hurry. Pull out the old collared shirts and put the collar up. And
you're going to pop your collar when you're playing with us, huh?
When we're done the round with whoever wins these contests and then sort of go into the clubhouse and say, can I have some water with lemon, please? Glendale is very accessible and is going to be a great time out there all summer long. You can check out their website as well if you want to check out memberships and joining. There's several options, and we'll be looking forward to taking some lucky listeners. We already have two winners, and we'll qualify some more for a round of golf and some lunch, courtesy of us here at TSN 1290's The Big Show and the Glendale Golf and Country Club. What's your go-to golf gear? Is there something you wear every round?
I used to always, you know, the Payne Stewart hat all through, like, before college, all through college. I've got probably 20 Kangles like that, different shades and stuff. I got away from it a little bit, but I think I'm going to get back to that, boys. I'll start pulling them out again this year. A little bit of an intimidation factor out there for you guys.
Interesting.
The Payne Stewart cap.
Yeah, see, I've moved on to the Ricky Fowler... The brimmed hats.
Nice, yeah.
Like I got some Nike. I got Nike and Puma. I'm basically like a mixture of Tiger and Ricky.
Huh.
I'm either rocking the Nike or rocking the Puma. I'm sharp, though.
Just like, easy
I
on the orange.
Ooh,
See, every once in a while you walk in here with a matching outfit. It's pretty cute.
That's why I'm asking, because I do golf with the odd guy that, you know, looks like it cost him more than his golf clubs, like the white belt.
Hey, I've seen Gary Lawless out and about, and he's pretty doggone snazzy when he's dressing. Yeah.
He
was matching up and down. I think it was a sort of a blend of a black, purple, and teal thing going on. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, my goal is to look like I'm a really good golfer and just hope somebody like sees a tee shot that sounds good.
Crack.
And then, that Rowicki's a good, he can really hit the long ball. And then as I slowly veer off into the other fairway to go and find my drive.
Look really good and just walk around saying, bad day today. I'm a little off today. I'm a little shaky. Back to the Stanley Cup playoffs on The Big Show, TSN 1290. And, of course, two more games. Canadians and Rangers are tied 2-2, heading back to Montreal. Columbus Blue Jackets stave off elimination. John Tortorella said before the game, I just want to hear that quote-unquote crap music they play after the game. The guys need to turn on that radio. They eke out a win. The Penguins would not go away, but the Blue Jackets stay alive with a 5-4 victory to force Game 5 back in Pittsburgh.
Isn't that something? The Penguins, just the whole not go away thing, right? But they sure look like, to me, especially in the earlier stages, a team that was up 3-0 in games and just maybe not the level of oomph necessary to step on the throat, to put the dagger into the heart here of the Blue Jackets. And like you said, the Blue Jackets able to escape here with a win. And I thought Fleury a wee bit shaky. No, but I'm sure he'll be fine and dandy when he comes back. I expect this to get put to bed maybe the very next game.
Yeah, good for Columbus to get a win on home ice. That's basically what this game boiled down to. Just some feel good for the Jackets and their fans. But for Pittsburgh, as good as they look right now, and I mean their off game almost got them a 5-5 tie heading into OT. But they're not going to win the Stanley Cup without Matt Murray in net, because Fleury's just—he's just way too unpredictable, way too up and down. He had a couple good games to start, two I think bad ones in a row in Columbus, and that's why I just don't know if he's the right guy for the Jets to target. I know the contract lines up nicely where you can get a guy for a year or two, but if you want to be a playoff team, I don't know if the valleys of Marc-Andre Fleury are going to get you a whole lot farther than what you saw with Connor Hellebuyck this year, especially at his age. He'll be 33 by the time the season starts.
You know, and that's the debate we're going to have to get into more strongly than we have already, is just what's the Jets' philosophy in your guys' mind going into the offseason when it comes to the goaltending? Is it to, as I said yesterday, to augment Hellebuyck and sort of help him and have a guy that maybe might play more than 2025? If Hellebuyck continues to struggle a little bit, or is it to go get a bona fide starter, allow Hellebuyck to back up for a year or two as he continues development?
Either way, it's not worth Marc-Andre Fleury. You don't want to bring in a guy here just to augment him who's operating at the same rate and is going to cost you $6 million cap hit, man, for 2 years.
Well, I really don't think the cost is going to matter, just because I don't think Hellebuck's next contract is going to be over the top. Like, to me, I look at the goaltending. If you're doing it for $6 million, I don't care that one guy's making one and one guy's making five.
But he's not even worth it. He's not even coming close to being worth that amount of bread. And you're talking about, like, even it's not this year, it's next year as well. So you got all kinds of Jets upcoming, the UFAs, RFAs, contracts coming up. He's not worth it right now. And turning 33.
I think the price, though, is going to be around that range anyway, no matter who you get.
So then why give up a draft pick? If that's the case.
Yeah, no, I'm
right?
Saying, like,
yeah.
You're not picking up Mason or Bernier. You're not, or Darling. You're not paying them $6 million a year, man. No way.
Yeah, if you're going to pay someone Fleury money, then go after Ben Bishop at that. Like, if you're willing, Chevy is willing to go down that route, then I would much rather they just pony up for a big free agent deal, although I don't think I really see that happening either.
Before we delve deep into it, just what do you guys think the philosophy will be? Is it to augment, or is it to go get a bona fide starter to start winning games here?
I don't think they're looking to grab someone to make Connor Hellebuyck a backup. Like, and people need to understand how dramatically different the approach is from an organization. If they feel they've got the right guy and they just want to push him, that's a way different process involved than wanting to replace a guy. I don't think they're anywhere near wanting to replace Connor Hellebuyck at this point.
No, I think in the Jets' perfect world, they can get a Mason or a Darling for 2 years and have the two battle it out, and whatever happens, happens. Because at that point, you're not hurting Hellebuck's development, and you're giving the other guy a chance. And if either guy beats the other guy out, then you're in a pretty good spot, right? I think that's the Jets' dream scenario. Now, if they're able to do that, I'm not so sure, but I think that's what they would probably prefer is to... I think they want to go a bit above just kind of a really good backup. They want to get almost a 1A type guy.
Yeah, that's what I think the question is when we're throwing all these names around. It's whether they want to bring in a guy that, you know, not only helps Connor Hellebuyck off the ice, but, you know, pushes him and maybe plays, I'd say 30, just, you know, limit Hellebuck's time. Or is it we need to win games, we've got a team that could be in the playoffs, and we're going to bring in a bona fide number one starter, let the two battle it out, and whoever gets it, gets it. And if it's not Hellebuyck, he'll continue to develop. I don't know if that's the philosophy of the team. I think it's more to get a guy with some experience in here that could win him some games and to continue to play Connor Hellebuyck. That's my philosophy on it, but I don't know what the Jets are and if they see it the same way. Like Kevin Cheveldayoff said on Husser and Lawless here on TSN 1290 at the end of the year, we have way more information on Connor Hellebuyck now. We have way more understanding of where he is and what he is, but he never got into, like, and this is where we feel he's at. So that, I think, is the big question. But back to the Stanley Cup playoffs. San Jose Sharks bounce back, and after being shut out two games in a row by Cam Talbot of the Edmonton Oilers, the series is now tied 2-2 after the Sharks pound the Oilers with 7 goals, 4 of them on the power play. And Leon Draisaitl gets a 10-minute misconduct and a major for spearing. So two questions here. Your thoughts on the game? And then will Neon Leon be back for game 5?
Yeah, the game was just, maybe McLennan summed it up best saying, hey, all these wrong things that they did in the same game. And maybe that's the best way to sort of group them all, bundle them all together like that. Just a big crap down your legs, and then you move on to the next game sort of thing, right? And the Draisaitl spear is absolutely idiotic. And I think it was, you got 5 minutes plus a game. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing to me, though, guys, and if there's not a suspension here, it's just an absolute farce. You're down 5-0 in the game. Who cares you get the game, right? Like, the game's over. So the NHL will be crapping the bed big time. I expect them to do it if they don't suspend Draisaitl here. We know basically that they equate one playoff game to 5 regular season games. He should be suspended at least for one game here of the playoffs. In the perfect world, he'd be out of the playoffs for such a stupid act. And how dumb are you, man? What are you doing making such a stupid action like that? But if the NHL doesn't suspend him here for at least a game or two, just another huge missed opportunity to do what's right on the ice.
You're right. It is a game misconduct and a spearing major.
I guarantee you they'll point to the misconduct as... that's the suspension.
Yeah, which is a joke at 5-0.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a joke at any point in the game, to be totally honest.
But especially when the game's done.
Right. In the same vein of the Matt Calvert play, where it's not a hockey play. It's not a hit on a player with the puck. It's an unsuspecting cheap shot. So obviously he should be suspended. But if I'm the Oilers, I mean, could someone tell Nugent Hopkins and Eberle that this series is underway? Like game one isn't tomorrow night? Because outside of a brief uplift of a just frenzied Edmonton crowd in game one, it's been McDavid, it's been Cassian, end of story. They have absolutely no offense from any... I mean, the Cassian thing is great, and the Sharks are doing a great job on McDavid, but, I mean, come on, you need just a little bit of something from some of those other guys to give your team a chance.
What happened to Ryan Nugent Hopkins? And I say that because he came in when the league was still big and physical. And then, you know, the league is now at a point where a guy like that should thrive, like a Johnny Gaudreau body type, not that big. And he spent a couple of years, I think after 2 years in the league, he spent an offseason putting on like 20 or 23 pounds. and just bulking up to be bigger because he was always injured because of the physical play. And now that the game has shifted, what happened to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? Why is he struggling?
I don't have the answer for that, but could you lump that up with the, like, he is linked to the old Oilers that were just constantly underperforming. Could you maybe, and it's, you know, he's well into his NHL career, obviously, right? Hitting the ice when he's 18, now 6 years into it. Is it maybe just
43 points
part of that sort of
games.
Vacuum that existed with Edmonton that sucked the soul out of some of these guys? I don't know.
But when you go back to the playoffs, I mean, that shouldn't that invigorate you a little bit? And his number, it's just weird that his numbers have gone. He had the great rookie season where he was right around 0.8, 0.9 points per game. And then he kind of hovered around the mid-50 point mark, and then it's just been cratering ever since then. And Jordan, I mean, maybe you could explain that with Jordan Eberle a bit older, but I mean, come on, guys. This is a guy who's been clutch for Canada in basically every tournament he's played in for the country, and he's just, if you didn't tell me he was playing, I'd say he was hurt, because he's just a pair of guys that are invisible, and they're playing close to 18 minutes a game for you. You just need a lot more out of them.
It has been a while since he's played for Canada, if you're talking Nugent-Hopkins, right?
I've been Eberle for that.
He's been in the league for 6 years. He had 43 points, 18 goals, and 82 games this year. Just bizarre, because I thought this guy was going to be, you know, 70 points a year minimum.
You're talking Nugent-Hopkins right now?
Yes, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, you wonder. I mean, there was the Hull for Larson trade, and a lot of people wondered if if Hall was the guy or if it should have been Nugent-Hopkins. And you kind of wonder, you know, in a series like this, Hall on McDavid's wing, Hall on a line of his own, if, you know, if you were able to move Nugent-Hopkins for Larson, if that could be maybe a difference maker for the Oilers right now.
I would think that's the Devils going, I want Hall, not Nugent-Hopkins, but who knows. But anyway, I just thought this was an interesting discussion. Watching parts of the game last night, too, I was just like, where is he?
Like, and I really wonder, those two, like the holdovers guys from those years of remarkably disappointing and underachieving, and the guys that weren't committed. Remember the coaches complaining and the lack of discipline and defensive play, all that sort of thing with these guys? I just wonder that lingering effect, the way those guys sort of eroded or wore down during that time frame. I wonder if any of that, you know, that can attach itself to an athlete sometimes. I have to wonder about that.
Well, and there's the other philosophy that or thought process that some have that maybe, you know, now that McDavid's there and they bring in Milan Lucic, and like the old guard of this is the future and this is the stars are no longer the stars and this is who it is. He's centering the second line, or was, with Lucic and Eberle too. So not that he's awful by any means. I just expected a little bit more from him. We'll take a break. Much more in the Stanley Cup playoffs coming up in the next hour. But up next, we talk Jays and Raptors on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You can stream us on the iHeartRadio app on all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. Stream on The Big Show, baby. That's my Frank Costanza. It's not that good. Toronto Blue Jays aren't that good. They continue to struggle. They had a day off, and they hosted the Boston Red Sox, and Marcus Stroman got lit up a bit in his first poor performance, his third of the season. The Jays rallied in the eighth and the ninth, but couldn't overcome the deficit and lose another game 8-7 to the Boston Red Sox. And Johnson, the pitcher for the Red Sox, who I was talking about his 8.31 ERA yesterday, lowered his ERA to 7.20 with a win over the Jays. The offense, you know, puts up seven runs. The pitching lets them down. The pitching's there. They have no offense. They continue to go round and round. J.A. Happ is now on the DL with elbow inflammation. Aaron Sanchez is back from Kansas City, where he got his blister and his fingernail worked on, but he's on the DL. Josh Donaldson's on the DL. Kevin Pillar is now at the start of the lineup. Jose Bautista's still in the two hole and can't hit 200. Every day, gentlemen, is it time to panic now?
Well, yeah, you're definitely walking down the road of panic, right? It's just, you're just depends on how far down the road you are at this point in time. I don't even know if it's panic. It's maybe something more dire than that. But it's Stroman giving up 8 hits on 4 2/3. And at least for everyone watching, you saw Russell Martin get a dinger. Right? Woo, there he goes. Be able to circle the bases finally. But it's just continued disappointment here. And you know, a little bit of garbagey time, as garbagey as you get in baseball, maybe with the lead that Boston had on Toronto for the Blue Jays to throw up 3 in the 8th inning and make a bit of a game of it. But yeah, just another disappointing all the way around, more or less, still. And they're going to get outclassed here and probably buried by the Red Sox for the remaining games.
Well, if you get buried by the Red Sox, your season's damn near over. Like, that's where they're at right now. 2-11, you just can't go through. I mean, you can't go through a stretch like that at any point in the season. So I'm well down the road of panic. I'm basically at the end of the path because you've almost buried yourself. You're already 3 games behind the next worst place team in the majors, Let alone the top of your division.
Yeah, every other team has 5 wins now. St. Louis has gotten a couple. Toronto is 2-11. The Raptors bounced back with a 106-100 win over the Milwaukee Bucks yesterday to even their opening series at a game apiece. A much better effort from the Raptors last night, gentlemen?
Specifically, Kyle Lowry, right, out there and does what he does and looking darn good. The story of the night in the NBA, though, is Chicago, the 8 seed, going up 2-0 on Boston. And now people starting to whisper a little bit, did the Cavs intentionally fall to the number 2 spot to avoid this resurgence of Butler, Rondo, and Wade? It's interesting stuff. And we talk about it all the time, how ridiculous and kind of boring the NBA playoffs are. But here, possibly, we're going to watch and witness a number 8 take down a number 1.
Crazy like a fox, LeBron and company, right? But for the Raptors, they played much better. But in a way, if I'm the Bucks, I feel better about the series than I did after game 1. Because Toronto played at a real high level. Milwaukee did not have their best night. Antetokounmpo did not play or shoot super well until late.
It was a one-point game.
Yeah. It was a one-point game.
In Toronto
with 9 seconds left. Yeah. So, the Raptors are able to make this a bit of a series, but I still think they're in big-time trouble heading over to Milwaukee.
It'll be interesting for sure. Back to the Stanley Cup playoffs when our good friend from the Hockey News, Matt Larkin, joins the Big Show next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit tsn1290.ca. to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon on The Big Show, TSN 1290. It is 6 minutes past the hour. Supposed to get up to, I believe, 13 today at some point and be nice out. We'll keep you up to date on that and everything else going on in and around Winnipeg as we thank you for joining us to kick off your morning. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and continuing our talk on the Stanley Cup playoffs, of course, and welcoming back into the program our good friend from the Hockey News, Mr. Matt Larkin. Matt, how are you today?
I'm good. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, sir, and thank you for joining us. I guess we'll just start with a little bit of a fever in Toronto the past couple of days. Your thoughts on the Leafs and the Caps series so far?
Oh, it's been a really fascinating series. It's been exciting hockey, obviously, every game going to overtime. And what's really interesting about the series is it's not sort of this plucky David giving Goliath a kind of cute little run. Like, these games have been dead even. The Leafs are playing without fear, and the action is very back and forth. And I don't think it's just a case even of the Washington Capitals feeling jitters because of this history of choking. I think you're seeing the Leafs outskate them and beat them with speed, and that's a legitimate advantage they have over Washington, especially when the forwards are forechecking on Washington's veteran defense. And suddenly this series looks pretty even. I don't want to say it's quite a coin flip yet. I would still pick Washington to pull it out, but it's really close right now, and it's pretty exciting down here in Toronto.
It is. It's neat, Matt, because a lot of people, even as excited as the Toronto Maple Leafs make those that just don't have an innate hatred for them, are making fans. It's people still reluctant to say, yeah, I'm going to pick them. But boy, depending on what happens tonight, like that could really quite get pretty overwhelming here. This is why we watch sports. I heard one person pick the Leafs to win this series. Everybody else is just basically brushing this aside and scoffing at any possibility that the Leafs might have. But this is the essence of sport, what we're witnessing with this.
It really is, and it's been so fascinating to watch. And, you know, I mean, I still thought the Caps had a distinct advantage. You know, you had Braden Holtby, who's obviously better than Frederik Andersen. The Caps are a bigger, stronger team. They had extreme depth. They have so many different lines that can hurt you, a deep defense core. They were the best defensive team in the NHL this year, not just an offensive juggernaut. I thought they checked off, you know, enough boxes they could handle the Leafs, but as these games are getting longer, going into overtime, I'm really noticing the Leafs' youth, and they just have a lot of freshness in those legs, and I think they're wearing down the Caps. And now all of a sudden you have Carl Alzinger, who doesn't look like he's going to play game four, and that's Washington's best shutdown defenseman. And these Leaf lines, there's three different lines that can score. Even that checking line seems to be giving Washington fits on the forecheck. It's suddenly a little scary for Washington, and I do believe in the old expression, I think it was Pat Burns who said it, that game four is the most important game of any series. And I really think that whoever wins game four tonight is going to win the series.
And we'll have Game 4 live on TSN 1290 tonight, starting at 6 o'clock for your listening pleasure. Matt, I was watching Game 3, and I just thought to myself, I don't like the Blue or the Maple Leafs defense. Like, I'm not going to bash them too hard, but overall, when I look at who's playing there and stuff, but then I look at Jake Gardner, I don't think I've ever seen him play better. And this, the overall core, I would think Washington could get to this group. Why has the defense been so good for the Maple Leafs?
I think it's mobility. I mean, I think the Leafs are leaning very heavily on two guys in particular, and that's Jake Gardner, who's playing the best hockey I've ever seen him play, and Morgan Rielly. They're sort of skating the puck out of trouble. And it's possible that they're going to wear down, but these guys are young, so it hasn't happened yet. And I think Washington's game plan in the first 10 minutes of Game 3 was excellent. You saw them play very heavy on the forecheck. They banged those defensemen. It was almost like they said, hey, the Leafs are already depleted. Let's put some licks on the few healthy guys they have and really hammer them on that forecheck. And look at that. It was 2-0 Washington a few minutes into the game. And I thought, okay, here we go. The Caps have this figured out. And then the Leafs counterpunched, and then it went away, and all of a sudden they ended up winning the game. But I do think in that first 10 minutes of Game 3, you saw what should be the strategy for Washington, especially on Gardner and Rielly, because those guys, if you play them physically, you can sort of take away that mobility and get them playing a little bit scared.
See, an idiotic play last night, Draisaitl with the spirit of the junk of Chris Tierney. He gets 5 minutes in a game in a game where they're down 5-0 at the time. Matt, do you have any doubt whatsoever the NHL should suspend him?
I do have doubt. I mean, funny thing, I don't know what it is with the Spears this year. There's been a lot of them. You know, you saw Brad Marchand, you saw Sidney Crosby. But Sidney Crosby did not get suspended. We've seen Brad Marchand was fined in the past. Milan Lucic was fined in the past for one of these Spears. Marchand only finally got suspended when he did it multiple times. And he's got a long rap sheet. Whereas Leon Draisaitl has never gotten in trouble with the Department of Player Safety. So I think that works in his favor. And I'm going to guess a fine over a suspension, but I haven't done some digging yet. I'm going to do more digging today and find out. But if I'm guessing right now, I'm going to say fine. I'm working against Draisaitl, of course, as the league does pay attention to the narrative of a game, because that really implies what a player's intent was. And when the Oilers are getting blown out and you see a play like that, it's obviously frustration, and that means it's obviously malicious. So that will work against Draisaitl. I think at minimum we'll see a fine. If there's a suspension, though, I think at most one game, and I'm going to guess just fine.
Yeah, I would be very – I won't be surprised if he just gets fined, but I'll be disappointed if he just gets fined. Matt Larkin from the Hockey News joining us – fined, I should say. Hockey News today joining us here on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 11 minutes past the hour. Matt, great piece from the Hockey News on the Jack Adams Award, and Mike Babcock, of course, John Tortorella, and then Glenn Gullickson up for the Flames. And I thought you made some good points, or the Hockey News made some good points on Gullickson. Tell us why he should be nominated and the season he's sort of had over the heavy favorites like Mike Babcock and John Tortorella.
Yeah, sure. I wanted to toss Gullickson's name out there because I do think, you know, you're going to see a Babcock or a Tortorella, a high-profile guy, win. But to me, I love looking at which coach had the most tangible impact on a team. And there was a lot of criticism in Calgary during the Bob Hartley era that they were a lucky team. That one year they made the playoffs and he won the Jack Adams, but they were a really bad possession team. All the stat heads would point that out year after year. The Flames got dominated. They got peppered with shots every night. They were a really bad defensive team under Hartley, and it eventually came back to bite them. They missed the playoffs last year. But Gullickson comes in, and the team changes the way it plays. And yes, they've added, you know, Brian Elliott had some decent patches this year. They got Troy Brower, and Matthew Tkachuk has been a fantastic rookie. Dougie Hamilton had a great breakout season. But really, the way the team plays has changed, and they're suddenly a top-end, above-average possession team. And to me, that's coaching. If a team is changing its system, its structure, and the amount of shot attempts it generates and the amount of shot attempts allows, I think you gotta hand that to a coach. And it's the same reason why Mike Sullivan, I think, is another dark horse candidate that should be considered in Pittsburgh, because he changed the way that team played when he came in last year. I think there's been a similar effect with Gullickson, and I hope he does get some consideration.
Matt, you've got an interesting piece on an individual that is getting a fair amount of talk here in Winnipeg just because of what the future holds for him. He's got a no-move clause, a no-trade clause, 2 years left with a 5.75 cap hit. What does the future hold for Marc-Andre Fleury?
It's going to be interesting to see. You know, I think Fleury, he's loved in Pittsburgh. He has a great relationship in Pittsburgh, and that's why they kept him. There wasn't a huge rush to move Fleury this year. There wasn't necessarily a perfect fit for a deal, and it really obviously worked out very well for them that he came in with an injured Matt Murray, although he struggled a bit last night, but still, he's been overall a godsend in that series for them. But at the same time, somebody has to go. The expansion draft is coming, and if Fleury's still there, then it means Matt Murray's going to be exposed, and obviously Pittsburgh can't allow that to happen. So there's a couple different scenarios that could play out for Fleury. One would be he waives his no-move clause and is claimed in the expansion draft by Las Vegas, which I don't think is as crazy as some people might believe, because Vegas, it's possible in the salary cap era, an expansion team in this time, this day and age is going to be better than people think. And also, Fleury is a guy who has his Stanley Cups already. It's not like he needs to chase a championship. He might just be excited to get a chance to play and be the face of a new franchise. So I think that's still a sleeper place for him to land. But I think the ideal fit for Fleury would be a competitive team that's looking to upgrade its goaltending and will install Fleury as a starter. To me, the Dallas Stars are the team that leaps off the page as the perfect fit. I think you're going to see Calgary in the mix as well, because they've got both their goaltenders are unrestricted free agents. I think even the Philadelphia Flyers don't have a true starter. And I did name the Winnipeg Jets as a team to watch. I mean, obviously they have Hellebuyck and they have Michael Hutchinson, but if, for example, Hutchinson got claimed in the expansion draft, I could see an apprenticeship formation with Fleury and Hellebuyck, because Fleury's only got a couple years left in that deal, and he did such a good job with Matt Murray, and then the Penguins, they praised him so much because Fleury was so egoless, and he really helped Murray, and he still does. And we see how much Murray has blossomed, and Hellebuyck is a similarly regarded prospect, a great prospect. And maybe having a mentor like that for a couple years, maybe they split the time 50-50, that could get Hellebuyck finally to the level that Winnipeg needs him to be at to really become a competitive team.
Of all the teams down 3-0 in the playoffs, Matt, the one that surprised me the most is Minnesota, just because of the way they're playing. Can they come back?
Well, I'm glad you named Minnesota, because we were talking about it in the office, and we were trying to decide which team has the best shot to come back, and the obvious pick is Chicago. But I don't know if Chicago is actually in as good shape as people think, because they're not the team they were a few years ago if you look at those possession numbers. Whereas Minnesota is the best possession team in the playoffs so far, which suggests they're unlucky. All those games have been close. They've essentially been 3-2-1 games, because one of them, there was an empty net goal. Minnesota's been right in every game, and they've actually controlled the play more than St. Louis has. They've got better scoring depth. So I still think each one of those games could go either way, and if the flow of the action is the same, then maybe those pucks start bouncing in Minnesota's favor. They take it one game at a time, but I still think they're the better team, and I could see a comeback happening.
Matty, the impossible Erik Karlsson sauce pass from the goal line to the opposing blue line, the best pass you've ever seen in your life?
Oh, my God. I think he put it in the Pantheon with the Mario Lemieux feint in the Olympics, where he sort of lifted his stick and didn't touch the puck. I put it in that category. It's an elite pass, and it doesn't surprise me coming from a guy like Karlsson. I was saying yesterday, it looked like he was flying a drone. Like, he had control of the puck remotely, and he landed it so perfectly on Mike Hoffman's stick. And it just, that's how good he is. He's the best offensive defenseman of the past 25 years, and he's going to be a Hall of Famer.
And really, Matt, right before we let you go on that, I think he's an outstanding Norris candidate year in, year out, but I've always been hard on him for his play in his own end and his battles along the boards. That's really come around the last probably year to 2 years. I'll even go back two seasons. Where is he just for the general overall best player in the league? He's got to be top five right now, is he not?
I believe so. I think he's best defenseman in the league. I mean, I'm in the Carlson camp, and I think he's a top three player in the league. I would put him just behind Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby.
Wow.
I think that's sort of a hint at my Hart Trophy ballot, guys, by the way. But I do think that Carlson, he does get a bad rap. And to me, I mean, I like to remind people the definition of the award, the Norris, it's the defenseman who shows the best all-around proficiency in the game. And no defenseman has a stronger all-around impact on the game. Carlson is great offensively. He controls the play because he moves the puck so well. And the shot attempts for the Senators are so skewed when he's on the ice. And he's blocking shots. He's second in the league in blocking shots. He's up right up there. Takeaways, he's demonstrating all-around ability, and that is the definition of the Norris, which to me is why he is the best defenseman in the game.
Is Bobrovsky part of your heart consideration?
He may or may not be. He just might be right.
Excellent. We'll find out. Hey, Matt, we always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us, and have a great day. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure.
Thanks so much, Matty. Take care, bro.
Is Bobrovsky in your guys' heart candidacy, or is Carlson?
The numbers when Carlson is on the ice or off and the impact it has on that team is mind blowing. If I had to pick between the two, I'm going to have to lean towards Carlson.
Yeah, Carlson's my boy, so I'd probably go over that just because it's just so hard with goalies, because any good goalie is the MVP of their team essentially. Mm-hmm. Like you take them off and I mean look at a team that missed the playoffs outside of Buffalo. Probably had poor goaltending. But for me, I know he's not leading the playoffs in scoring, but Carlson's, you know, as early as it can be, is my leader for the Conn Smythe right now if Ottawa can make it past Boston.
Your next chance to qualify is coming up next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
With the countdown to Canada's 150th birthday, TSN 1290 is taking off to the True North Strong and Free with our Ultimate Canadian Live Sports Tour, and we want to take you with us, or send you on your own, I should say. 780-1290, the 12th caller through, will qualify. Listen for your chance to qualify, as this is the final week for the Ultimate Canadian Live Sports Tour at 7:15 here on The Big Show, 12:15 on the Don Vito Roundtable, and 5:15 with Hustler and Lawless. And the great part about this is the destination. You pick the sport, you pick the Canadian city, and we'll pick up the tab. We'll take care of the airfare, accommodations, and tickets. You just enjoy the experience. Just for qualifying, listeners will get a Jets gear gift card and a TSN 1290 golf card with discounts to several courses across the great province. Visit tsn1290.ca for additional chances to qualify and input where you would like to be headed to as well. The grand prize winner will be announced on The Big Show Monday, April the 24th. It will be our fourth grand prize winner. Loren Bilby was our first. She'll go to Vancouver to see the Bombers and the Lions on July 21st. Jordan Senderwich is going to head to Montreal to catch the Montreal Canadiens and the Winnipeg Jets the next time they play there. And Eldon Beer will be in Oakville, Ontario at the end of July to watch the RBC Canadian Open. So congratulations to all of those three. And we'll find out who our qualifier is today. And, of course, once again, they will get the TSN 1290 discount golf card and, of course, a Jets gear gift card, as it is our final week of qualifying. We're doubling up right now. 780-1290, the 12th caller through. And our 12th caller through and our qualifier today on The Big Show is...
It is Mr. Chris Slammin.
Chris Slammin! Slammin' Jammin', how are you? There we go.
That might have to be the official call of the Big Show, this Ric Flair woo.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. How are you, Chris?
Good, how are you guys?
We're doing very well, thank you. Thank you for listening. Congratulations. You get our TSN 1290 golf discount card and a Jets Gear gift card just for qualifying today, and you're also entered for the final grand prize draw on Monday, April the 24th. How do you feel?
Oh, boys, it feels like Friday night. I'm 18 again.
It feels like Friday night with a Monday off.
You betcha.
All right. Where would you like to go if you're our final grand prize winner?
Probably either, I don't know, maybe Montreal. See a Montreal-Boston or a Montreal-Jets.
Are you a Bruins fan?
No, I'm a Habs. I'm a Carey Price fan, not a diehard Habs, just a Carey Price fan.
Sounds like you sound about right for Montreal. Sounds like you'd have some fun out there, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Montreal.
I've never been out east, so.
And you make a good point. Like, if you get there and the Jets, it doesn't work into your schedule, a Boston Bruins-Montreal Canadiens game in Montreal would be pretty sweet, too.
Yeah, I'd keep that ticket.
Attaboy, Chris. Well, we appreciate you listening. Congratulations. You're in for the big draw, which will be on the big show Monday, April 24th. Perhaps we'll be calling you. And if we are, we'll get you over to Montreal and catch a Habs game for that and the Jets or the Bruins or whomever you would like. Thanks for listening and congratulations.
Thanks, boys.
Good luck, Slammy.
Chris Slammin. Slammajama.
It's a sweet last name right there, man.
Woo! At some point with that last name, you got to consider wrestling. Even if it's when you're 9 or 10, you got to.
I think so, yeah.
The Alabama Slammas.
There you go. I like it very much. And I never thought of that, but that is also a great opportunity. Maybe you want to see Montreal play Boston or Montreal Toronto.
Oh, yeah. Any of those classic rivalries, man.
Great rivalry for sure. Okay, everybody. That is our latest qualifier. The next chance for you to qualify is at 12:15 today with Rick Ralph on the Don Vito Roundtable and at 5:15 today with Hustler and Lawless. And, of course, remind everybody, as I know the phone lines are jammed and it's hard to get through, if you do not get through in the phone lines, to visit tsn1290.ca for your additional chances to qualify. Referendum at 5:15 on Hustler and Lawless as well. Yesterday, it was Mr. Patrick Laine. Patrick Laine. Westy says it's his birthday today.
It is. 19.
19. We'll discuss what we did on our 19th birthdays and do the referendum for Patrick Laine next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on tsn1290.ca.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the Dreammaker Auction in support of the Dream Factory Friday, April the 28th at the RBC Convention Center. The Dream Factory is a charity dedicated to fulfilling dreams for kids battling a life-threatening illness. Since 1983, they've created cherished memories for more than 600 families in Manitoba. Each dream we grant is as unique as a child who dreams it. Tickets are on sale now through dreammakerauction.ca. The Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. 7:33. 33 minutes past the hour on The Big Show. And it is referendum time. Last night on H&L, filling in for Gary Lawless, it was Mr. Patrick Laine. And I changed my grade. I went a little higher and then I said, no, I'm going to stick where I was originally. Hustler tried to convince me. Couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. And I stayed where I was.
This is because of grade school situations where teachers were kind of picking on you?
No, I deserved every grade I got.
Yeah? Okay.
Speaking of our debate on the word effort, had a lot to do with my overall grades, I think. And when I put in a good effort, I did okay.
Okay.
I'll just leave it at that.
All right.
It's also Patrick Laine's 19th birthday today. What'd you do when you were 19 for your birthday?
I can't recall, but I wasn't potting 36 in the bigs, I'll tell you that much.
No, eh?
No, a little short of that.
Do you have a little clue what you were doing?
Well, I can't. There was a social at the U of W and an incident that goes down as an all-time classic, but I can't get into it.
That's fine. I just
those involved right now are kind of shaking their head in shame.
You celebrated a little bit, though. That's mm-hmm. the point.
Things got out of hand a little bit, yeah.
Things got a little... It got crazy last night. Brandon Rewicki, what'd you do on your 19th birthday?
Let's see. Last week, I...
Last week? Last weekend.
Might have had 36 or something.
Good call. I can't actually remember.
I was going to say, shouldn't you not be able to remember 18 or 19? Maybe 18 because it's kind of the big one, but I don't know if anyone should remember their 19th.
Yeah, the 18th is the big one. The 19th, I'm not sure. And then you're just waiting for 21, I think. So I don't know what I was doing either, but I understand that it totaled 36 minimum. For sure. So Patrick Laine has 36 goals in his rookie season, 28 assists, 64 points in 73 games. Your grade for Patrick Laine's first season in the National Hockey League?
Well, he's got a Corsi of less than 50% at 48.7. No, just joking. look, man, 19 or 18 years old. I try and come to an understanding of that, playing with men in the NHL, and a guy who already is stronger than the vast majority of maintaining puck possession. Like, you see those little things that he does in the battles along the boards, stuff like that, where he's winning him or maintaining puck possession. 18 years old, 64 points in 73 games. Mind was blown the vast majority of the time. There's only one place to take this, and that's to an A+.
An A+.
No question.
It's an A+.
Come on.
It's an A+ of the highest order. Mm-hmm. Like an A. If you could tack on a couple of pluses there.
Yeah, well, and sticker, like one of those cute gold stickers that are sparkly.
Are you guys serious?
Dude,
the best player on the team.
No. See, you're. I think, Jim, when you're looking at the grades, it's not like a definitive grade on who he is as a player. Because it's not like he doesn't have room for improvement or anything.
It's kind of what you expected, right? What did you expect from this guy?
Yeah, taking everything into context here. And it was kind of funny because I was going to say, you know, he could have scored on his own net and he would have got an A+. Well, guess what, boys? He did. And he hammered it home, too. He did it with style.
He still got an A+.
The old hammer it home, too. Yeah, that's amazing.
But when you put just the guys in his comparison of 18-year-old seasons, and that's important to remember, too, is that it's not just a rookie season. It's an 18-year-old season. And when you're talking about goals scored as an 18-year-old, and the company is Gretzky, Howerchuk, Yzerman.
Period.
Excuse me? Like, pardon?
Yeah.
And goals per game, fourth all-time as an 18-year-old. 64 points in 73 games. Like, it exceeded my wildest expectations by a long shot. And if he plays the full 82... might have dropped in 40 goals as an 18-year-old, which just doesn't happen. So I don't know how it can be anything other than an A+, to be totally honest with you.
So let's hear about your A. You didn't go B+.
I started this with a B+.
Shut up.
To A-, and then we went to a commercial break, and I thought about it, and I go, no, I'm going B+. Like, I expected him to have about 60 points. He has 64. I give him full credit. I expected that to include about 25 goals. 20 to 25s, but I thought he'd have a lot of points. So he has 60 points. I understand that when, and I need everybody else to understand, when I give him a B+, the things that you take away from his season that knocks him off being an A have nothing more to do with just his first year in the league, all things I expected, and being a rookie, and, you know, his age. But to me, I think I handed out two, maybe three A's this year, and it was to Blake Wheeler, who showed up night in, night out, actually switched a position for a couple of games and played very well at it, and is very good defensively. I don't expect Patrick Laine to be Blake Wheeler yet because he's only 18. It's a rookie year. But to me, an A is a pretty perfect score, and he's not a perfect player yet. So I don't know where he has room to go if he's already, especially an A+. Hustler gave him an A yesterday. You guys are giving him an A+. I'm giving him a B+, but the B+ isn't because of anything other than looking at his overall game and seeing he needs to get better at some things and will get better at some things, and I have full faith that he will and develop into probably a pretty consistent A to A+ player in this league and on this team. But he's just not there yet as a complete player, so I'm going B+. And I also want to give him full credit for his defensive zone play got miles better the last 2 to 3 months of the season. And I think that, you know, a lot of people wondered why he wasn't scoring at the same rate or if he was getting tired. I just think that's him being a very coachable player and starting to learn the game and other aspects of it. But for the first 2 or 3 months of the season, compared to the last 2 or 3, there was a difference in his overall game. And I give him full credit for improving that. I also expected, as an 18-year-old player, for him not to vastly improve the defensive parts of the game and things that he needs to continue to develop overall. There's no doubt he's a dynamic player. There's no doubt he's going to be a superstar, and there's no doubt he's going to put up a ton of points. But if we're grading the overall season for Patrick Laine, he did literally score a goal on his own net. And I think you do that when you're not totally focused. You clearly are on the ice. The puck comes to you and you fire it there. You're not focused and paying attention. It's a horrific thing, but it did happen. I think of the time he was on the 5-on-3 power play in Dallas and turned the puck over at the blue line. I think of the time they're playing the San Jose Sharks and his man beats him to the net to tap in for a game-winning goal. This is a poor defensive playing team. I understand that there's not a perfect player, and I want to give him credit again that he did get a lot better at those aspects the last two or three months of the season. But the first two or three months of the season, that was lacking from his game, and I understand that that's what he's going to learn at this level as an 18-year-old. But I just can't give him an A right now because it just wasn't there consistently throughout the year, like it is for the play of Brian Little and Blake Wheeler, whom I did give A's to. So it's not a negative B+. It's a positive B+ with room to grow, which I think he will. It's an outstanding season. There's not a lot not to like about Patrick Laine, but when grading his overall season, I give him a B+.
I think you're giving him a B+ because your mom dropped you on your head when you're an infant.
Well, and this is what we got into with Hussler. I go, is he perfect's the wrong word, but is he, you know, perfect? Does he have no flaws? And to me, that's where you start with an A+ with a player, and then you start detracting some of his flaws.
For me, the way I've graded everybody is, what were my expectations of this player? Like, you know, right across the board, that's how I'm grading these guys. And for Patrick Laine, you listed a number of things. And I even his defensive play was, I think, probably a little bit better than what I thought that it was going to be. You heard Paul Maurice comment on it fairly regularly, how it was at a level higher than what he thought. I think he was absolutely brilliant, spectacular. Next year's going to be scary. Scary good for us and scary for the rest of the league.
Which is good. Which is good. And, I mean, fourth in the league in goals per game. Once again, as an eight, I think 18. Everything he says, yeah. 18. Yeah. He's 18. Like there's 25, 26-year-olds that can't touch what this kid is doing, basically just stepping onto the ice in North America for the first time. The fact that he handled all of this with relative ease at the young age of 18, and his only comparables in the history of this sport are the greatest player of all time, one of the greatest players of all time, and then the greatest player in this franchise's history. Like, for me, that's an A+. I don't even have to think about it too much either.
That's a higher grade than you gave Blake Wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
But
correct.
It's because we're giving out grades compared to what we expected from the player.
Compared to what we expected.
Yeah, what were our expectations, and what did that player do above or below?
See,
that?
And I give out a grade based on the season.
That's what I'm doing too.
And how they played. I don't sit here and go like, I thought he would score 25 goals. He scored 36, so he exceeded expectations. I look at the season, and I look at how he's played night in, night out. And the same for Blake, and the same for Brian Little. And like for me, for Blake and Brian Little, I don't know what they need to get better at. And for Patrick Laine, there are a few things, not many, that he needs to develop and get better at. And that's, again, due to his age. But he will do that. And when he does, that's when he'll be an A+, in my mind.
Yeah, in your mind.
Like Neil Armstrong, B+ for going to the moon. We're talking about a historic season here. Like, that's literally what this is. One of the best rookie seasons in NHL history. I'm trying to bump it up to an A for you.
You're a heartless man, Mr.
I could go A-, but again, I just think that he's got nowhere to go. Like, with an A+, he's got nowhere to get better, and he's literally going to get better.
Well, and that's not necessarily true. I think a 95 is in, well, like a 96, 97, 98, 99 out of 100 would all be A+, right? So there's some room to grow. And then you got the old A++ that comes into play, right? Where you could take tests where, I remember in college, it's possible in some tests to get like 104 out of 100 because of bonus questions, things like that, right? It's possible, baby.
I'll do it this way. It could be A- to B+. It's in that range.
No, A- is
how's that fence feeling? You got the post. Where's that post sticking?
Oh, I'll go B+.
Get rid of the minuses. Hop on the plus trade.
How many times did you say about the greatest players in the league in their rookie seasons, he could score on his own net and they'd get an A+, and then he literally scored on his own net?
Like three of them. That's the whole point, though. That's the whole point. He was so good that he scored on his own net.
Let me ask you guys this. What, as great as he is, and I fully admit that, what are his flaws?
What are his flaws?
Does he have none?
Well, flaw. Flaw is different from...
Well, what does he need to get better at? What does he need to work on?
Okay. That's way different to me than a flaw. It would be, I suppose, things defensively related. It might be when he's on that... Although I didn't buy the whole teams are overcompensating for him and taking away his space. I mean, we witnessed him make space. What are his flaws? Maybe just invest a little bit more absolute commitment along the lines of a Blake Wheeler to things defensively, right? And maybe his greatest flaw of all, my friend, is the fact that he's 18 years old.
Yeah, the defensive play and inexperience.
Yeah.
That's probably it, I would say.
Yeah.
But isn't that still...
It is, but we're not.
And that's all I'm saying. Like, is that, I'm not harping on him and saying this was awful, this was bad. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's not just complete yet.
Yeah, and that's not how.
And that's not his
fault.
Aren't
rating him. We're rating him on what were expectations as an 18-year-old coming in to the NHL. I expected him to be considerably weaker defensively, considerably weaker on the puck. Did not realize how much of a fantastic passer he was. So there's all kinds of places where he exceeded greatly my expectations.
But he wasn't very good defensively for 3 months of the season.
I disagree with that. I didn't think that he was. Nikolaj Ehlers was bad, horrendous defensively on a number of occasions. I didn't find the same way for Patrick Laine.
And I think Laine's offensive numbers could have been even better, too, if he was utilized on the power play differently.
Hello?
Because he had, what was it, 8 power play goals in the first half of the year and then
scored 2,
almost,
taken off the top team in the Dallas game.
Went almost 3 months without getting one after that. So
hey, this team had the worst power play, one of the worst powers. That's why I'm here. Benched. off the number
well,
one team.
And that I'm not holding against him. That's why when I do say that, like, these are some of the things that he needs to just get better at. And he will. I give him a B+.
That's one of my favorite aspects of the Jets season this year, is how forthright and honest he was there. Just young guy, no filter. Patrick, you just can't say stuff like that. Bam, off of the top team, off the number one PP, after you score 2 goals.
at the year-end exit interview, he actually said that Paul Maurice helped him extensively, and he grew as a player immensely under the guidance of Mr. Paul Maurice.
I believe it.
So anyways, those are the grades. I have no idea what Gary was off yesterday. I'm sure he'll weigh in on that tonight on Hustler and Lawless, beginning at 3 right here on TSN 1290. An A from Hustler, an A+ from Troy, an A+ from Brandon, and a B+
from the Grinch,
from John Smith. So tweet him. we'll take a break and we'll open the Boston Pizza fan line, of course, in the 9 o'clock hour for you to weigh in on the referendum for Mr. Patrick Laine tonight at 5:15 on TSN 1290. The referendum is on General Manager Kevin Cheveldayoff. We'll take a break. Come back. NHL news and notes next on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the Manitoba Liquor and Lotteries MS Walk Sunday, May the 7th at the Forks Festival Stage. Canada has the highest rate of MS in the world. When you join MS Walk, you join our country's efforts to help improve the lives of Canadians affected by MS. Registration is now open. More information is available online at mssociety.ca. This segment is brought to you by Olympic Homes on the Big Show, TSN 1290, NHL News and Notes Times, gentlemen. Time tonight, right now, and we will start with tonight's games, and we'll start with the one that you can listen to live right here on TSN 1290. Game 4 between the Washington Capitals and the Toronto Maple Leafs, live from Toronto, with the Leafs leading the series 2-1. Who you got?
Oh, baby! Can't wait for this sucker to start, man. Who you got? Well, I'm going to have to lean towards the heart with this one a little bit, boys, and just for the madness of it and the panic and all the rest of it, wouldn't it be something if they pull this off and go up 3-1 in the series? Holy smackers. And I think they got a heck of a chance to do this. You know what? And honestly, I don't really care who wins. The Leafs is a great story. I want to ultimately see Ovechkin hoist the cup above his head. And my goodness, the round 2 matchup for whoever moves forward here will be great against Pittsburgh. I'll pick the Leafs to win and continue to shock the world, put the Caps, their back against the wall in a huge way. But really, I don't care who wins. I want the game to go to overtime so that our joy, whether you hate or love the Leafs, you're tuned in watching this and enjoying it. Just the joy of watching the game being played with this level of intensity, ferocity, with everyone in Toronto going nuts. It's so much fun to watch. Please go to about three overtimes.
The best part about this series is that no matter what the outcome is, Caps or Leafs blowout or tight game for either side, it's like the storyline of the night, the storyline of the playoffs still. I think the Caps pulled. I can't see the Leafs beating them three times in a row like that. That's a bit too much for me. I think and Washington, I know Toronto played good, but they did get their fair amount of bounces in the previous game. They had the goal off.
Especially
I think
goal,
it was Orpik's Fanny. Kuznetsov had a bit of an open net and hit the crossbar late.
Fanny's
so
a good word.
I'll take Washington here, and I think we won't see overtime for the first time here. I'll say the Caps by two tonight.
I think Washington pounds the Maple. I'm not saying that ever again after three straight overtime games. I think Washington wins it. I think they win it in regulation, and I look for Braden Holtby to step up. I think it's time for him to start playing up to his level. He hasn't been horrific, but he needs to be better. And I think he sort of pulls one out here in the even this series going back to Washington. Senators are in Boston to take on the Bruins. They're up 2-1. Who do you like in that one?
I really liked what Ottawa did last game and coming and sort of sealing the deal to win that game. I'm gonna say the Sens go up 3-1 in that game with Craig Anderson having a big night.
I picked Boston before the series. Not feeling great about that pick. I wonder, I kind of mentioned this earlier, but I wonder if tonight's the night that we see the first ever forward versus defenseman line matchup where Bruce Cassidy puts out Bergeron. If he can find a way to put Bergeron's line out there against Carlson
against,
as much as he
against
can.
Against the offenseman.
Exactly. Yeah, the Rover,
the
right?
Offenseman.
Play
like
a little
that.
Red Rover here because... I mean, those are the two. It's funny how Boston's getting everything essentially from the Bergeron line. Ottawa's getting essentially everything from Carlson on the back end. And if they can match those, I know Ottawa doesn't want that matchup, but if Boston can kind of work it so they can throw that out there and neutralize what he's doing out there, that's probably their only way at winning the game in this series because he's just playing at a superhuman level right now.
I'll take Boston. I think they bounce back, although it would not surprise me if the Senators take this series in the next two games. But that's why I'm taking Boston, because they need to win tonight, I think, heading back to Ottawa. A couple of elimination games tonight, starting with the Minnesota Wild in St. Louis taking on the Blues. Can the Wild stay alive tonight, or do the Blues sweep this?
218 to 141, I believe, is what it is. 228 to 141 shots directed towards the net, with Minnesota having 228 compared to St. Louis's 141. You're trailing 3-0. I just don't – maybe it happens, but at some point in time, the hockey gods have to step in into this situation and give the Wild a win. The Wild get a win tonight.
Not only do the Wild get a win, but they get two, then they get three.
You're calling him up, really?
And then Bruce Boudreau loses in Game 7 because the hockey gods have no mercy.
Oh, no.
Why?
No.
There's a call.
And his season for Coach of the Year goes from an A to a B-plus for Bruce Boudreau. This is funny. Ali is losing his mind with me on Twitter. I dug up other grades by Jim Tilt Sports. Jesus, B-plus in winemaking. Gandhi, B-plus in nonviolent protest.
That is gold. I hope he sent that to all of us. I got to retweet that.
Boston Beats fan line will be open at 9:15 today. I have the Wild staving off elimination tonight. And quickly, gentlemen, as we're out of time, Ducks and Flames. Do the Flames stay alive tonight?
I hate the Ducks. I'm going to pick Calgary to win because I want to see that streak go to 29 in Anaheim. Game 5.
Just mean, man.
Calgary's going to take about 100 penalties and find a way to be up 3-0, and they'll blow this one in typical Flames fashion. And the Ducks, who are playing maybe the worst out of all the teams in the first round, will find a way to sweep the Flames.
I think the Ducks sweep the Flames tonight, too. I don't know how they get up off the mat after that last loss. This segment was a presentation of Olympic Homes. Get an Olympic coach in your corner and build with confidence. Visit them online at olympichomes.ca. We talk some CFL next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a presenting media sponsor for the 2017 Royal Canadian Air Force Run, Sunday, May the 28th on the Royal Canadian Air Force Base. Registration is now open for the half marathon, 10K, 5K, and 3K family fun run. The RCAF Run helps support military members and veterans to soldier on and support our troops. For more information or to register now, visit rcafrun.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki with you on The Big Show. 5 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290, and we're going to talk some CFL now. Have you been given the commissioner's job yet?
I have not. It's my understanding I am on a short list, though. See how that goes.
Probably take a pay cut doing that.
From this very lucrative radio business, yes.
We're going to talk some CFL right now, and we're going to do it with Marshall Ferguson from TSN. Marshall, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
We're doing well, thank you. I guess we'll just start with that there with the commissioner and Jeffrey Orich moving on in a couple of months. Your thoughts on the whole decision for them to part ways, and then who you think might be a front runner?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit short-sighted on behalf of the Board of Governors, to be honest with you guys. That was my first thought, and I understand that he had his trials and tribulations, and clearly there were some decisions that he probably would have wanted back. But, you know, I might be biased because I got to know him a little bit personally, and I was around him a little bit in those crunch time situations when he was out at stadiums and meeting fans. And, you know, I've seen him buy people drinks after games out at bars and be a very Canadian guy. And so when everybody wrote how awful of a person he was and how many missteps he had and how he just didn't fit the CFL and he didn't understand, I had a little bit of hard time understanding that kind of angle. I know, again, that there are some spots that he could have been better at, but, you know, I was a little bit disappointed just because I look around at all these other leagues, you know, when you see Adam Silver stepping in after 20-some-odd years of being a deputy commissioner, and he is groomed and ready to take over for Stern, and Stern was there forever. And you see the NFL where they have some kind of consistency, even though they have a little bit of turnover, and you see Gary Bettman, how long he's been there. And it's like, you know, I'm a CFL guy through and through. I want my league to have that guy who's around for a long time and is really, really good at it. And so that was why I think I was a little bit disappointed in seeing him having to move on. But in terms of front runners, we had Glenn Suter on our show to talk about it, and he threw his name in the hat, so that was fun. But we also had, you know, names being thrown around like Pinball Clemens and the rest. My perspective on it, I don't have a front runner because what I think we do when we have commissioners who are, you know, moving on and there's an opening is that everybody gets very romantic about it. Like, we like to kind of paint this picture of, oh, it should be Pinball. He's a true, you know, fan favorite. He's this, he's that. He's played and coached in the league and all the rest. Or we should get, you know, this guy who's an analyst because he knows the game and he's popular and he understands TV. Guys, it's going to end up being some lawyer. Like, that's what it is. These guys have to come in. They have to manage the league. They don't have to be a mascot. If we wanted a mascot, we could hire Drake as a global ambassador, and the guy could just not show up to games like he does for the Raptors. So, but I don't think we're going to end up having that. I think it's going to be some guy who's going to have to deal with player safety. So who that guy is, I mean, he's probably sitting in some boardroom somewhere in North America that I don't know about.
I like that point you make, re-mascot, because that's sort of what Pinball Clemens would be, as much as I like Mike Pinball Clemens. But I'm going to throw in a name, Jim Hobson, who's a guy I think would be a fantastic commissioner. But nonetheless, Marshall, you've got a fantastic chart here showing the September rankings of CFL draft prospects and now where it's at in April, and a couple of players that have really changed their situations. And I'll ask you why that happened. Looking out at Laurier with, and I apologize for any names I say wrong, and I'll probably say them all wrong.
It's all good. It took me several months to learn them.
Okay, Kwaku Boateng, who goes from 2 to 12, I believe. And then, of course, local boy here, Jeff Gray, who back in September was 11 and jumped up to 3. Can you please talk about the journey of both those players and how different their ranking is now?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's Kwaku Boateng, but trust me, it's funny because I played against the guy when I played in the OUA here for McMaster, and he was a defensive end in his first year in 2013. So I played against him in 13 and in 14, and I've been calling him Kwaku. And I called him Kwaku all the way through the draft process until the end of about last month, and then I saw somebody, actually Chris Ackie, who plays for the Alouettes now, a defensive back, and I was just talking to him, and I said, what can you tell me about these Laurier guys? He goes, man, Kwaku's great. I went, who? Kwaku. Oh, okay. All right. I guess I've been saying it wrong for 4 years, even though I played against him and talked to him and everything else. So, So Kwaku Boateng is a guy who, to me, might have been overvalued just because of the success that Laurier had. Like, he was the marquee player on a marquee defense that upset Western on the road in the Yates Cup Ontario Championship. And so there were a couple of guys on that defense. Nakis Onyeka is another linebacker that was at the National Combine who I think might have been a little bit overvalued, because we look at team success and we really fall in love with the picture of, man, you know, they've got a defensive tackle named Jalen Price out of Hamilton who's a great player that looks awesome. So we rate him kind of highly. Then we look at the linebacking core. We love, you know, Nakis Onyeka. Then we look at the defensive line. We love Kwaku Boateng. And so I think that Kwaku was probably a bit of a victim of team success, valuing him very, very high. With that said, he tested exceptionally well when he was at the National Combine in Regina. And I think his game film is fantastic. He's fundamentally sound and all the rest. I think he's just a victim of both that team success and overjudging him at that early part of the season, and also the fact that people just moved up the board. Like, when you have a guy like Jeff Gray that you're talking about, who comes out and has the pro day that he does and starts to get NFL interest and all the, like, what is the scouting bureau supposed to do? They can't leave the guy back at seventh and go, yeah, he's not a better player than Kwaku Boateng, because he is. And the reason that he is that he's more consistent. He's been around. He plays a position that's more valuable in the CFL. He's getting more looks from down south. The scouting bureau list that I made that graphic for is not who's most available, who's the smartest pick. It is who is the best player available on this board, because the guys from 1 through 5, you might only see one of them in the first year or two that they are around in this league. And so that's why I think Jeff Gray has consistently made his way up the draft board, is that he's being evaluated, he's being looked at closer and closer under that microscope of a draft, and that's why he is sliding forward, while a guy like Kwaku Boateng from the Laurier Golden Hawks is sliding backwards, because we look at them so closely over the last couple of months.
Marshall Ferguson joining us here on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 12 minutes past the hour to talk some CFL. So the Bombers have the first and sixth overall pick. Who do you think they take at number one, Marshall? And also, is there a guy that, regardless of what the Bombers' needs are, just should go number one overall in your mind? Is it some of the guys you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that some of the interesting names that you could throw around that are in contention for that obviously would be the top end of the scouting bureau. So you're looking at, you know, big linemen essentially across the board here. I don't think that Winnipeg is exactly going to dive off the board and take a receiver like Danny Vandervoort from McMaster at the first overall pick. I can't see that happening. Taking a receiver that high has not happened really since Chris Bowman, when you go back through history, when he was taken first overall by Hamilton. And so this league has trended away from, unless there's a really spectacular, special, elite talent, it just doesn't happen. You guys know that as much as I do. And so when you look at the line play, it's Eli Ankou, who comes out of UCLA, and Justin Senior, who come out of Mississippi State. They're ranked first and second on the scouting bureau. My own evaluation, I don't know if Justin Senior is a true first, you know, scouting bureau kind of guy. He's massive, guys. Like, I mean, he is prototypical size. He played in the SEC at Mississippi State. He is a thick, strong, awesome player. But Josiah St. John was also a big, thick, strong, awesome player who, you know, played in a major conference down in the NCAA. And when he did come up here, he was good, don't get me wrong, but he didn't scream, I'm a first overall pick. And I don't think Justin Senior does either. So Eli Ankou is a really, really special player. But in my opinion, honestly, and I know that he's getting all the NFL interest, and I understand all the dynamics of how weird the CFL draft can be, I just feel like if you're going to take a risk on a guy at first overall pick that is likely to get an NFL look, and it's the same idea as a Enoch Mwamba, where, you know, he plays a couple of years there, he makes his way off to the NFL, and then he ends up coming back for Saskatchewan. You're going to have that risk no matter what, because if you're taking somebody in the top two rounds, they naturally are going to have looks from the NFL because they are talented enough to be a top two round pick in the Canadian Football League. For me, if you're going to take that risk, why not make it a local guy? Why not make it worth the risk so that if he does ever show up, then you actually get an opportunity to have an absolute home run? And to me, that's Jeff Gray. Like, I don't know why you would want to go away from having the opportunity to have a guy like that. What happens if Jeff Gray shows up in Saskatchewan and plays for 15 years because the Riders took him in the second round? You know what I mean? Like, that's just not something that I think, if you are the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, you should be able to stomach. I think Mason Woods from Idaho, who's a big 6'8 guy who looks a lot like Matt O'Donnell that plays for the Edmonton Eskimos, was probably going to be the first overall pick going into the combine. But I've read all the articles, as I'm sure you guys have, where basically Kyle Walters came out of the combine and said, we were eating peanut butter parfaits and having a great time at DQ, and then all of a sudden we realized the guy that we thought was going to be first overall or a top three pick might not be the guy that we want to take at that spot, because nobody has jumped off the page and really screamed first overall. So for me, if there's question about the first overall pick and you're just looking for a really, really solid talent that if he does show up in your uniform, he's going to play for you for a while and be really effective, that's Jeff Gray.
Okay, now that's awesome stuff, man. And May 10th here, everything's going to go down and be a bunch of fun to watch. I think that the Ticats this season, Marshall, are the rebound team of the year. What are your thoughts about what the Ticats might accomplish this year?
Yeah, I mean, all of it is pretty much going to hold on the idea of Zach Calero staying healthy. And it's easy to say that, guys, because, you know, as you know, we all build these narratives out when we talk about quarterback play and how important it is to the CFL and all the rest, which, of course, is true. But Zach Calero was healthy for a decent percentage of the season last year, and Jeremiah Masoli played just as well as he did. So I'm not sure it was all about quarterback play. I think Hamilton is going to be really effective, but they've got a lot of questions in the draft as well, because with Fantu's out, it's not as though they're going to have that natural ratio flexibility. So they're going to have to find ways to replace his productivity and to replace his ratio flexibility by having a national in either that same spot that they draft or develop, or having somebody with national status who starts at a different position across the offense and defense. So I think they have a lot of questions going into this. In free agency, they weren't overly active. I think you guys fell in love with Drake Nevis and Matt Coates, and so they ended up over there pretty early on in the free agency process. But I think that it is, and it's a type of season for the Tiger Cats where they have to take a step back, look at the big picture of what they're trying to accomplish and what their adversaries in the Eastern Division are doing, and then figure out the best way to be able to get around them. And to me, that is to solidify your backfield and to have people stay healthy, protect your quarterback. You know, you get Jake Olsen back at left tackle, and then hopefully as you move forward, you can have a group that is your core, because they believe in keeping a certain number of guys around that are going to be long-term. And I think that they have that group there to have success, but so does Ottawa, even though there's questions and even though they lost some guys in free agency to Montreal like Ernest Jackson. I think there's a good group there that they can build from within. But as you know, man, it's a long grind. Sometimes it just comes down to who has the most mental strength and fortitude by weeks 10, 11, 12, 13 when you hit that Labor Day. Because you got to stack up some wins in the early part of the season, then you just got to stay consistent. So I think Hamilton's got the ability to do that, but we will see.
Great stuff, Marshall. You can follow Marshall Ferguson on Twitter at @TSN_Marsh. A great insight on the Canadian Football League and, of course, the draft that is coming up. Bombers, 1st and 6th overall picks in the first round. Thanks for doing this and have a great day.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it so much. Talk soon.
Awesome stuff, Marshall. Thanks so much, man.
We'll take a break. Much more on the Big Show to come. Gus Katsaros at the bottom of the hour as well. That's next on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor for MTS Super Spike, July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. Registration is now open and event tickets for non-participants go on sale now. Taking the stage this year is multi-award winning Sam Roberts Band. Proceeds from this event will be supporting Kidsport and True North Youth Foundation. More information is online at tsn1290.ca. Gentlemen, a piece of journalism. Confidential report finds politicians and star athletes may have jumped the queue for MRIs in our fair city and province. The original piece was by Kevin Rollison and Jane Gerster. Want to give them credit for the original piece that I'm quoting from Paul Wiesick of the Winnipeg Free Press's article today on "What's a Couple More Days in Line, Grandpa? Buff Got Hurt Last Night" is the title of the article. And it delves into a report that has come to light through good journalism that athletes, Jets and Bombers in particular, have, and some politicians and health board workers, have jumped the line for MRIs. And I'm wondering your thoughts on this, given the wait times for MRIs in this city when an athlete gets injured, that they go in the next day and get one done.
And the wait times, I think there's two folks in my family waiting to go get MRIs, and we're talking like 6 months-ish, 4 months, 6 months, something like that to go in. And I'll say this, being around the Bombers for 18 years, I remember the first time somebody told me how long they had to wait for an MRI. I was like, what?
Well, this is a part of the piece from Paul Wiesek, and of course, pick up a Winnipeg Free Press to get the full involvement. I'm just brushing over the... But those on the receiving end of suspected preferential treatment included a handful of local politicians, regional health bigwigs, and donors. But the overwhelming majority of MRI cases flagged by the auditor during that period, 59 of the 92 involved Jets and Bombers. The Jets made up almost half of the flagged cases, 44 of 92, while the Bombers accounted for another 15 QE jumpers.
How is this an unknown thing? That's what I don't get. Yeah. Like, you see somebody get hurt, or any sports fans see someone goes down at IGF or someone get hurt at the MTS Center, and they, like, not just the MRI, but they're getting their surgery done real quick. It's been happening for decades. How is this a story? Or how is everybody that asleep at the wheel? That, like, man, somebody gets hurt and they're getting an MRI inside of 3 days from what I know about the situation with pro sports in the city.
Well, and I think it would be the next day almost all the time.
Yeah.
And, hey, look, I was part of the waiting list this past year. Had an appointment in April for my knee. MRI date, December 27th.
That's remarkable.
So I had to wait 8 months, and kind of fully knowing that there would be a fair number of... I mean, isn't this just kind of the way it works in life in general, too, where preferential treatment is given to just about every higher-up or people in the elite class? Like, it's not fair, but it's just kind of the reality of the situation.
And I wonder, is that the way it should be defined, or is this community, and are we as a city and province, are we okay with the teams that we love and adore that make the impact and whatever, have the, you know, the standing as far as entertainment value, all the rest of it? Are we willing to absorb the athletes that are entertaining us to allow them to jump in line like that, and are we willing to accept that?
Because what's the alternative?
That yeah, you
Patrick Laine. Let's say Patrick Laine sprains his ankle.
Don't mention names.
Just a sprained ankle. Just okay. a little tweak. Maybe nothing serious.
He's been through enough today on his birthday on this show. He has been through enough today.
All right, let's player X. Player X tweaks his knee.
Yeah.
Jets are in the middle of a playoff race. He's out for 6 months because he can't get an MRI.
Not even mind the playoff race. It happened in the first game of the regular season. He's got to wait 6 months to get an MRI.
He's out for the year.
The season.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you were losing guys because you had to wait for MRIs? Like, are you kidding me?
Well, and this is the case. Like, I had needed an MRI once, but it was more I did something to my knee. They said I tore the A or the MCL, but it was just a small it was a small tear. So I went to physio right away, and they booked me just to make sure there was no more damage, and I waited 6 months. It didn't prevent me from going to work. It didn't prevent me from – so I'm wondering, you know, I don't know about the politicians or the bigwigs or anything like that, but as for the athletes, it literally prevents them from working. So – and I'm not saying that makes them better than us or anything else, but what I'm saying is like if say you're a construction worker and you do your ACL, MCL, and it prevents you from working, I don't know if that bumps you up higher than somebody who does what I do.
Boy, I sure doubt that, my friend.
And say that, well, you can wait, or if that, like the pecking order is interesting, but for an athlete, like that is them making a living.
It is.
And I don't know if an athlete should have to wait, say, 6 months. And then just to find out that he's fine and he could play. Like, it's...
It would be really interesting to hear from, of course, our listeners, everyone here, like, for us included in this, are we as fans of sports willing to, like, if you're not a fan of sport, you're going to have a real hardcore, probably, opinion of this. But if you're a fan of sport, I wonder if all fans of sport are like, yeah, I don't mind waiting 4 or 6 months knowing that the athletes in your community, the pro athletes, are going basically the next day.
Hmm. Well, Miles is already on Twitter. Amongst the 900 I got about Laine's grade of a B+, but said, so if Patrick Laine needs an MRI, Paul Wiesek wants him to wait 26 weeks. Wake up, Paulie. Things like this happen with every pro team.
I think,
but this is a sports fan.
I think athletes, people can stomach that one. But if the politicians think it's a different matter. And it's a matter of them just for pure comfort and that sort of thing. That's not sitting well with anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what the question we'll do on the phone line and stick to it. It's athletes, because I don't know about what the process is for jumping the queue if you're a politician, or as Paul Wiesick said in his column, Big Week.
But if you want politicians, fake news said.
But if you want to read the article, and it is interesting, go to get a Winnipeg Free Press today, and Paul Wiesick's column there, and he refers to the original column about the report that was released by another pair of journalists at the Winnipeg Free Press. Great work there. It's a good read, and it's interesting. We'll open the Boss Pizza fan line on that as well. Up next, Gus Katsaros talks more playoff hockey with us on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor for the Play-On Hockey Festival, Saturday, May 27th and Sunday, May 28th on Chancellor Matheson Road. Registration is now open. Make sure to get your team in before the deadline on May 22nd. Get your teams organized quickly because space is limited. For more information or to register now, visit playon.ca. We'll get into the Boss Pizza fan line at 9:15 today because we have a guest, Jen Neal, editor from Puck Daddy, going to join us at 9 o'clock. But we'll take lots of Twitter feed on my B-plus grade for Line A, Huss's A, and Troy Westwood and Brandon Rewicki's A-plus as a grade. And, of course, the MRI jumping in line or up the queue for athletes, whether you agree with that or not. I've already got 10 tweets on that, so will be interesting. And a pro golfer let me know that when he needed one done on his knee, it happened on a Monday, and he got in by Friday to get his knee looked at. So that's really interesting. Different viewpoints on that. We'll do that in the Boss Pizza fan line once again, open at 9:15 today, and we'll try to get as many of your calls as we can. And, of course, throughout the day here on TSN 1290. Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey joining us once again today. Gus, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent stuff. I guess we'll start with the game of the day for most Canadians between the Washington Capitals and Toronto Maple Leafs. They're up 2-1. What are you expecting in tonight's game? And can Toronto go up 3-1 on home ice?
Well, I mean, if you take the entire series as a whole right now, aside from like maybe a 5 to 10 minute stretch in the previous game, it's been the Leafs that have been dictating more of the play rather than Washington has. It almost seems like Washington is taking advantage of the Leafs' mistakes rather than dictating the pace and the way that this series is to be played. I mean, their first game, they scored a couple of, I don't want to call them easy goals, but you score one on a 5-on-3 on a kind of a broken down play, an overtime winner that really shouldn't have gone in. In game two, the Leafs come back out and they steal one. In game three, they come out and they, you know, a 2-0 deficit, and all of a sudden they end up winning in overtime, which is another little issue here too. Washington with penalties that really shouldn't be taken. So I think that Washington has shot themselves in the foot more so than the Leafs being that good. At the same time, the Leafs have been very good. They've been hemming the Capitals in their own zone. They've been dictating the forechecking pressure. Washington can't come out cleanly. The only time that the Leafs start to suffer is in their own defensive zone. They don't have a very good structure, and they're giving the slot away to the Capitals. So I think that that's one thing that they'll probably end up going on through video and trying to get the puck out into the middle of the ice and getting shots on. You know, it's not like they're getting really good quality shots and really not generating enough to get themselves into positions to be scoring a lot. So Washington needs a few tweaks to kind of get back to their President Trophy winning ways, and that's a scary thought for the Leafs going forward.
Gus, is what we're seeing with Toronto taking this profound sort of playoff step and keeping up with the Stanley Cup favorite during this series, is this Mike Babcock genius on full display here?
I don't know. I guess you could kind of make a case around that, but what I feel from Toronto is they've been playing the exact same way that they have since Babcock stepped behind the bench. They've been using the same tactics. They've been essentially using a similar structure within their system. The placeholders that were there last year were clearly replaced with more skilled players, and this is translated into a much better overall unit. So you can credit Babcock for instilling the system and the structure for all the players to be doing as well as they are right now. But I think that they haven't really swayed from from whatever they've implemented from the beginning of his tenure to this point in time. Now, what really looks good in that regard is the skilled components that they've added. You don't just add an Austin Matthews and a skilled component in Mitch Marner and William Nylander without having a profound effect in your lineup, regardless of age and experience. It's those skilled components that really, really brought out what Babcock was putting into place last year. And now we're seeing the fruit of that endeavor, you know, chasing the President's Trophy down 2-1 and I guess the Leafs are trying to get a stranglehold on the playoff series tonight.
A couple of elimination games tonight, Gus, and I'm wondering, first of all, can Minnesota not only stave off elimination tonight, but if, of all the teams down by this deficit, I think they're the one team I would actually pick to maybe come back and make this happen. So I guess my question is can they? Do you believe Minnesota can win four straight, I guess?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. Minnesota has been kind of trending downwards for the last part of this, the last quarter. Their play has deteriorated. They haven't been able to generate as much scoring as they did mid-season. That mid-season scoring surge was a little bit of what I would call shooting percentage fueled, which means that they're just getting some very good pucks on net, and they happen to be going through. Perhaps that makes it a little bit more illusory that the Wild are able to score at will and try to generate an offense. The Blues have done a fantastic job of just shutting them down. But at the same time, though, it's not like the Wild have been bad. It's just that they haven't had that same kind of shooting luck that they did previous in the season. And what I feel now is they can definitely win four straight, but they won't do that unless they start getting back to those fundamentals and start getting a little bit more puck luck. Like the, and what I mean by puck luck is doing the things that that we're going in the mid-season and hopefully having some pucks go in the way that they were at that time. What St. Louis has really done is taken away a little bit of those outer edges and forced Minnesota into the middle, so they kind of have like a bit of a pincer movement. What Minnesota hasn't been able to do is capitalize on that space in the middle and actually get a lot of pucks in from there, so they're shooting a lot more from the edges, and they're not necessarily getting the best of chances. If they are to win four straight, they'll have to break through St. Louis's tighter defense and just try to get some better shot generation in place, because they're just not getting the type of shots that they should have been getting at this point in time in the playoffs.
Gus, for anyone who hasn't watched much Ottawa Senator hockey over the last couple of years, or has maybe been a little bit asleep at the wheel, no one has impacted their playoff series anywhere near to the degree in the brilliance of Erik Karlsson.
Karlsson could be a Hart Trophy candidate year after year, let alone a Norris Trophy candidate. I mean, we all lauded what Brent Burns did for the better part of three quarters this season, and then Karlsson just ended up smashing in that fourth quarter and you know, putting a defining statement on this season and as being one of Norris' favorites. At the same time, you could, just on your point, you could put Karlsson at that same elite level that brings Ottawa to that particular point. One star like that may not necessarily have that biggest of impact over an 82 game regular season, but in a head-to-head matchup, in a playoff, in a using the skills that he's able to generate and being the force that drives Ottawa forward. We see it with some magnificent play, these stretch passes and his ability to skate it out. One player can make a big difference in a playoff series, and especially if that player is a defenseman with that type of skill. If he has that puck on the stick, the other team is scrambling to figure out what to do. What we're witnessing here as hockey fans is one of the best ever defensemen to play the game. Playing on a team that is getting a little bit more, I don't want to use the word luck, but they've had some good fortune going over for them, some better goaltending and some timely offense. But what you get from Erik Karlsson is elite skills at every level, and he could be a dominant force in any playoff series.
Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey joining us on the big show this morning, 42 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290. What do you make of the Calgary Flames, and specifically that letdown in Game 3?
That 4-1 score seems to be as bad as the 3-0 score, which is as bad as a 2-0 lead. It's one of those crazy leads in hockey. But so Calgary comes out in game one and they lose the first game, every team is allowed to lose the first game of a series. It's just a feel-out process. But once you get into that second game, you can't allow a team to go up 2-0. So what ends up happening is a fluke goal ends up being the game winner, sends the Flames down 2-0 back home. They come out smashing in the third game. They took the play to the Ducks. They dictated the pace. They got to a degree where they were comfortable with a lead, and then they stopped. They ended up playing more of a prevent. The second, third, and fourth goals, you know, you have two that were reviewed, one that just kind of you could call borderline. So some of the elements that I think Calgary expected to go their way probably didn't go their way in game three, and it ended up becoming a 5-4 loss. I don't want to say that some of the things that have happened to Calgary along the way have given them some kind of a black cloud over their heads, but you don't score a fluky goal like in game two to win the game, and then a couple of marginal calls to get the team back into the game. At the end of the third period in game three, the Flames had the ability to score that game winner and go back and put themselves back into the series 2-1. They didn't. They let another goal in, and now they're down 3-0. So when I thought that the Flames were going to come out of the conference, let alone I didn't expect them to have this type of performance and these type of circumstances in this first-round series to put them in a place where they're down 3-0. Can they come back from 3-0? I think that the Minnesota Wild have a better chance against St. Louis than I think Calgary does against Anaheim at this point.
Did you see a realistic possibility of the Preds dominating Chicago like the way they are?
Absolutely, I did. Yeah. Chicago is a core team that if their core players, Patrick Kane, Artemi Panarin, Jonathan Toews, Duncan Keith, Corey Crawford, if those players aren't playing and they aren't putting up the offense that they need and playing a sound defense and dictating the play, I keep using that term, but if they are not dictating the play, Nashville is going to eat them up. Any team that played Chicago would eat them up if that core didn't actually come through. Now, Chicago's depth was fantastic throughout this season, and that's good over a longer period of time, like 82 regular season games. But in a tight playoff series, if that core doesn't come through, then that team isn't really going to make it through. And Nashville, being pretty balanced and being one of those teams that kind of came in off under the radar, this is typical. I expected them to win the series. I don't think I expected them to win this in this fashion, where Chicago isn't scoring in a couple of games and, you know, only generating a goal here and there. But I do expect Nashville to take over. And at this point, I think Nashville has all the tools in front of them and the leeway to make it at least to the conference finals.
Gus, we appreciate your time as always. Always good stuff from McKeanshockey.com. Thanks for doing this and enjoy your day.
Pleasure's mine. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Awesome stuff, brother. Take care, man.
Gus Katsaros on The Big Show, TSN 1290. We're going to take a break. We're going to tee up the Boss of Pizza fan line. We have a guest at 9 o'clock, but we'll be wide open at 9:15 today. That's next on the queue on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca.
All right. TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor for the 2017 Canada Summer Games, as all eyes will be on Winnipeg this summer as thousands of athletes from across Canada come to compete in 16 sports and over 250 events. The 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games will welcome over 20,000 visitors to our city, making it an event you won't want to miss. Start planning your holidays and get your tickets for the hottest summer in half a century. Individual tickets to the 2017 Canada Summer Games opening and closing ceremonies, all-day sport passes, and medal competition tickets are now on sale through Ticketmaster.ca. The 2017 Manitoba Hydro Torch Relay will visit 11 communities this summer. Be a part of the hottest summer in half a century and nominate a past or present member of your community to be a torchbearer. To stay up to date on event details, ticket offers, and more, visit 2017canadagames.ca or tsn1290.ca. We're going to tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. Jen O'Neill is going to join us from Puck Daddy at 9 o'clock, and we'll have the Boss Pizza fan line open at 9:15. Lots to talk about today, as there usually is, and we'll start with a former New England Patriot, NFLer, and convicted murderer, Aaron Hernandez, hangs himself in his jail cell. Found about 3:05 this morning with a bed sheet, and also used some articles to block the door from the inside, meaning it is a clear suicide. Aaron Hernandez commits suicide early this morning.
Yeah, and I said right out of the gate this morning that, you know, we're paid to speak from our heart and how we truly feel, and it's not gentle or politically correct, but this is how I feel about this situation. When you guys told me when I walked in this morning that he had done this, I said, good. I think the world's a better place without Aaron Hernandez. Same thing with Stevens yesterday. The world's a better place without those two people in it. So I don't find it sad at all that he took his life. Doesn't make me sad whatsoever.
For me, it's just a waste. He just wasted so much, and so many families are ruined because of it. And not just the family of Odin Lloyd, who he went to prison for killing, but there was the family of the two people that died. That I guess he got acquitted for the murders.
Doesn't mean he's innocent, but got acquitted.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And I mean, there's a family that immigrated to the U.S. innocent, and just a senseless killing where somebody bumps into him, he spills his drink, and like two people die because of it. Like the guy, he was just an evil person in all reality. And it's just, to me, it's sad more so that so many people had to suffer because of an idiot who had everything, the whole world in front of him, and just chose to waste it all away.
Sports Illustrated has a great article out from his brother talking about Aaron Hernandez and what his brother's doing now and everything like that. Rolling Stone, I tweeted this out early this morning, and it's probably the most tweeted story I've put out on social media since it came out in 2003 about the life of Aaron Hernandez, his upbringing, and how he constantly chose to just be a gangster. That's all he really wanted to be despite his talents and all the money and his athletic ability. That being said, I understand your point of view, Troy. I just think I don't feel sorry for Aaron Hernandez at all, but this is a tragic story, whether it's the people he murdered, whether it's the people he affected, and including his own daughter. It's a tragic story, and it comes to an end with Aaron Hernandez taking his own life early this morning in his prison cell. Other news to talk about today, gentlemen, is the NHL playoffs. Of course, some elimination games. Tonight, we will have Game 4 between the Washington Capitals and the Toronto Maple Leafs on TSN 1290 beginning at 6 o'clock. But three games last night. Columbus staves off elimination. The New York Rangers tie their series with Montreal 2-2. And the San Jose Sharks pound the Edmonton Oilers 7-0. Leon Draisaitl kicked out of the game. Kicked out of the game for his spearing of a player.
In the Sugar Pops.
And then that series is tied 2-2. Your thoughts on the games last night?
Well, in the Ranger-Canadian series, who's number 61 in the blue jersey? As a Ranger fan, I'm not quite sure who that is causing all that trouble. And that series, best three now, that's a beauty, super close, tight one. Pittsburgh, to me, looked like a team that was up 3-0 last night, and Fleury was a little bit shaky, but I'm sure they'll finish it off fairly soon. And the San Jose-Edmonton game, I liked Connor McDavid. Hey, man, it's not like you don't lose two games because you lose 7-0. One game, they stunk. It was brutal. Draisaitl, the spear. It's interesting. It was Matt Larkin this morning saying, hey, we're seeing so many spears as of late. Why do you think we're seeing so many freaking spears? Because the NHL doesn't do what it should do in suspending players for these spears. There should be an absolute minimum attached to it right away. Spear, sloof it, pick your other atrocities that happen on the ice. It's a joke how they deal with it. And Draisaitl, there's no question to me that should equal a suspension. Basically tossed right out of the playoffs for an idiot act like that, to me, in a perfect world. But likely nothing, right? Likely a little slap on the wrist, fine, just BS though.
Mm-hmm. Especially because in the same way Matt Calvert was suspended because his action happened after the game or as the game ended, game out of reach. It's the same thing here. Yeah. Like even though it's halfway through the game, the score was, I think, 5-0.
5-0, yep.
Right, so the game's over and you're performing an act solely to harm another player, right? Not a hockey play at all. So it should be a clear suspension, but I would guess 99% of people in and around the sport of hockey will probably admit, like Troy said, that nothing's going to happen here, which is a shame.
I think he should get at least a game, and I think he might, actually, just given the circumstances, but it would not surprise me if he is only fined. Patrick Laine, a referendum was last night. Hustler gave him an A. You two give him an A+, and I give him a B+. Your thoughts on Patrick Laine?
18 years old, absolutely brilliant rookie season. historical in many accounts, better in a number of areas than I thought he was going to be. I grade guys as far as what my expectations were, A-plus for Patrick Laine.
Yeah, it's a quick one for me because you look at seasons by an 18-year-old rookie in the NHL, and his contemporaries are Sidney Crosby, Dale Hawerchuk, and Steve Yzerman, along with Wayne Gretzky.
Heavyweights.
So when you're talking about, this isn't one of the greatest, it's not just a great rookie season, it's truly a historic rookie season. Maybe the best, one of the best we've seen from an 18-year-old in 20 years. And for me, the fact that if he plays the full season, probably breaks the 40-goal mark, I give it an A-plus, and I don't give it a whole lot of thought either.
I give him a B-plus, and I agree with everything you guys are saying. I just think there's room to grow. I know it's because of youth. I expected that. Scored way more goals than I thought he would, but he's around 64 points. I thought he'd score about 60 points. And just seeing his overall game develop defensively the last 2 to 3 months of the season, I thought was very impressive on how that part of his game came around, but wasn't very good that way in the first 2 to 3 months of the season. It just takes time. And being young doesn't fault you, but being young affects your grade in my mind. I gave A's, A-minuses to Blake Wheeler, to Brian Little, because of their all-round overall game. I think Patrick Laine is going to be a dynamic superstar. He'll get there, but overall in the season, very good rookie season, very impressed, and I give him a B+. Your guys' grade and girls' grades on the Boston Pizza fan line at 9:15. And finally, the Winnipeg Free Press. Paul Friesen putting out a column today based on the column by Kevin Rollison and Jane Gerster from the Free Press about jumping the queue from some politicians, some higher-up officials in the Regional Health Board, and athletes, Jets and Bombers, getting to jump the queue for MRIs in this city, whether you think that's okay or not. And I don't this is a sports show, so I don't know about the dynamics around the politicians and the health board officials. But just for athletes, if you need an MRI done in the middle of a season and you get in the next day.
Spent my basically the big chunk of my adult life in a situation where, as if you got hurt, you were getting an MRI inside of 5 days, probably the next day or the day after that. And then, you know, now I know folks I know and love, 6 month waits, 4 month waits, all that sort of thing. It's the norm in pro high level sports. So just real interesting, and ultimately wondering, with us as the sports community here in Winnipeg and Manitoba, hey, if you're listening from Ontario, Saskatchewan, same sort of thing, are we willing to accept this as fans of sport to allow our athletes to get in quick and get taken care of?
Yeah, and I understand kind of the dynamics of how things work in life in general, where people, I guess, higher up in the social class get preferential treatment here, but I mean, if it came down to name your jet that might miss 2 to 3 weeks at a crucial point in the season.
2 to 3 weeks?
I'm paid in the best case scenario, right?
Miss a season waiting for an MRI.
Even a month, though. Like, if one of your impactful jets has to miss a month just to find out what happens and then misses time on top of that, I don't know how many people in the city would be fine with that, even if they weren't sports fans.
Huh.
Jed Neal joins us next to talk some hockey, and then your opinions on all of that on the Boston Pizza fan line at 9:15 today. We'll be back with Jen and then your calls on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a presenter of this year's Pride Winnipeg Festival, May 26th to June 4th. This is the 30th anniversary of Pride, and there are diverse events happening throughout, including Pride Day festivities on Sunday, June the 4th, rally at the Legislative Building on Sunday, June the 4th, the Pride Parade itself downtown Winnipeg on Sunday, June the 4th as well, and then the Pride Winnipeg Festival at the Forks, June 3rd and 4th, Pride Parade registration, rather, is now open with regular pricing until May 1st. For more information, visit pridewinnipeg.com. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and we will open the Boston Pizza fan line at 9:15 today. And we're going to continue the hockey talk right now with Jen Neal, who's with Yahoo Sports, NHL Puck Daddy editor. Jen, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing very well, thank you. And the first question is, what does your gut tell you about Gibson or Bernier tonight for the Anaheim Ducks?
Oh, my gut tells me that I think he's going to go back, or Carlisle's going to go back with Gibson, but I wouldn't be entirely surprised to see Bernier. But I have a feeling he's going to just kind of go back to his starter and say, okay, kid, let's try this again and see if you're better this time. But the team in front of him wasn't very good at all either. But I think for that reason, then they'll go back to Gibson.
Jen, we're watching here. It's just a mind-blowing and so much fun, this whole Leafs-Capitals thing and the possibility of what might happen tonight with the Leafs going up 3-1. What's your take on this remarkably exciting series that in three games have pushed each game to overtime?
This has been by far, I think, the most fun series to watch. I don't know what it is about this Leafs team. It's just, they're just kind of a joy, and I guess I'm saying this from outside of Canada, that they're kind of a joy to watch. They could be the most likable Leafs team. Again, this is not, you know, my Winnipeg professional opinion, but they are just, they kind of remind me of the 2003 Mighty Ducks that Babcock coached to the Stanley Cup final, in that they just kept winning, and it was kind of blowing everybody's mind that they just kept winning. And I see the same thing here, except these kids are just dynamic, and they know that every single odd is stacked against them, and they just don't care. And I think that's hockey in its purest. That's why we love to, like, watch World Juniors, is because these young kids just have no idea what it's like to lose, really, like, at this level, and they're just pushing it as far as it can go, and it's been a fun series, maybe not for anybody in Washington, but I have thoroughly enjoyed this.
Is Glenn Gullickson a Jack Adams finalist in your mind for Coach of the Year?
I think so. I think he could be. I think we've got a lot of nominees this year. Yeah. I mean, again, the Broadcasting Association is the one that nominates them, and so the Professional Hockey Writers, we don't get that say, but I definitely could see Glenn in there. He just kind of was able to take all those pieces and wrangle them, and to make sure that these guys didn't get down. Because they, you know, when Johnny Gaudreau got hurt and everything kind of felt like it was tumbling around, you know, he really brought them all together. And he was able to get Brian Elliott's confidence back in some way, that giving him some time off and giving him, letting him get that chance to earn his way back into the net really paid off. I mean, he won, what, like 13th straight or something like that. I think that really says something about Glenn and how good he is. Now, does that pay off a second year? We'll see. But for right now, I think he definitely is in the Jack Adams conversation.
Jen, quite a remarkable statement game, I suppose, last night by San Jose, ripping the fanny off Edmonton, winning 7-0. If you have to push your chips one way or the other, and now what is the best of three, which way are you going? Who are you taking to win the series?
Oh, that's really tough. You know, I think last night was a game that was coming, that San Jose just really hadn't clicked at all in the series offensively. So they were bound to have a game where they were just going to just explode offensively. But I don't know why, but I like Edmonton in this series. Maybe it's just my inner California fan that doesn't want the Sharks to win anything, but I like Edmonton. There's just something about them that, and I can't believe I'm actually saying this, that I like what Edmonton has, and I also kind of think ahead to the next round they would match up against the Ducks, I believe. So I think that the Ducks could beat San Jose better, so that just contradicts my entire opinion. But I don't know.
Jen Neal from Puck Daddy, one of the editors, joining us and Yahoo Sports here on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 10 minutes past the hour. Boss Pizza fan line will be open in about 3 to 4 minutes time from now to get your opinions in on anything we were talking about today. Jen, under the old regime with Dean Lombardi in LA, it was a given that John Stevens was going to take over whenever Daryl Sutter decided he had had enough. Now with Luke Robitaille and Rob Blake running the show, Dean Lombardi's even gone there. Who is the onslaught or on-site favorite, and maybe just is he not anymore, John Stevens? Who are the Kings looking at to be their head coach in your mind?
Well, you know, Luke, I can't remember exactly if it was Luke or Rob Blake that said that the coach we're going to get is going to have NHL experience. And then there's been reports, I believe, in the last week that they were looking at Denver University's head coach as someone that could make the jump from college to the NHL. So that kind of contradicts their statement. But, I don't know. There's a lot of good coaches out there that could potentially fill in for the Kings, but who knows at this point, like what direction the Kings want to go overall, because this is the first time we're seeing really management decisions from Luke Robitaille. He does a lot of the business operation side and, you know, expanding to China and doing other things like that, but seeing the hockey operation side as far as, you know, putting his stamp on the management team in place, and same goes for Rob Blake, that remains to be seen. So I wish I had a better answer on that one, but I'm really not sure which way the Kings are going to go. But I think with the way their roster is comprised right now, they want a coach that can come in and, you know, flip the right switches right away and get that team back to the playoffs. I don't think there's any tolerance there for waiting to not get back to the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see which direction the Kings go with these positions and, of course, going forward. Jen, we appreciate your time. As always, thanks for doing this, and enjoy the playoff games tonight.
Thank you, and enjoy your time, Winnipeg. I would say have fun in the playoffs, but no, I can't.
Take it easy. Thanks so much, Jen. Thanks so much.
Right to the heart.
Joining us early, too, right?
Yes, out in the PT. So we appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jen.
Yeah, 7 a.m., but you know what? For my fans, because clearly I have a lot in Winnipeg, especially after that last comment, I will do anything.
Thank you, Jen.
Well, we'll have to have you back now for sure, Jen. So thanks for doing this. Enjoy your day. Excellent stuff.
Thank you, you too.
Boss Pizza Fan Line is open. Your grade for Patrick Laine's season. Aaron Hernandez hangs himself in his cell, if you want to give a thought on that. And, of course, the MRI, Q jumping for athletes, Bombers, Jets, and basically in any city. Your thoughts on that. 780-1290 next on The Big Show. TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Boston Pizza Fan Line is open on The Big Show. TSN 1290, 780-1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and Greg, you're kicking us off today. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hey, good morning, guys. Just wanted to comment on, I guess, the grading of the Jets. I'll admit I have playoff envy watching these games. It'd be how exciting would it be if the Jets were in the thick of things right now. But hopefully next year. With Laine, I thought Laine had a great year. The only negative grade that I would give him would be on his – he's great when he has the puck and when he's shooting the puck and he's got that open space to – he's got a laser of a shot. But I found that in watching him throughout the season, there were times when his defensive play was a bit of a hindrance. And, you know, with giveaways and not being as strong on the puck that I think he needs to be. And I think next year you're going to see a lot of teams – really zone in on him a lot more, taking away that time and space. And I wonder, a guy like that, almost like an Ovechkin, when Ovechkin's not shooting, when he's not scoring, there's a lot of times where he's ineffective. And just, you know, ask the Washington Capitals right now. So I wonder how that, you know, Laine will develop in that area, because there's still, if he wants to be an all-around player, it's not just shooting the puck and scoring goals. It's going to be a lot of defensive play, hanging on to the puck. So other than that, I'm looking forward to seeing him next year. So thanks, guys.
What's your grade then, Greg?
I would agree with you. I would say a B+. I'm not all about the goals. I know he's a young 18-year-old who wants to score. He wants to get those highlight goals, and there's nothing better than being at the arena and him getting a nice top corner goal, but I would say B+.
Cool. Greg, appreciate the call.
That's cool, man. Good call.
Morgan, you're on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Go ahead, Morgan.
Hey. First of all, I just want to say I'm a big fan. I try to listen almost every morning that I can.
Appreciate
I was listening
that.
And I heard you guys talking about the MRI thing, and I kind of wanted to comment on that. In other ways, I don't agree with preferential treatment for professional athletes, but in this sense, I actually think it makes a lot of sense. These people require the ability to move their bodies for their livelihood. And it's true. If someone's sitting out for 6 months waiting for an MRI, that's pretty much a whole season gone. Like, on the other hand, my problem is more or less with politicians getting in for MRIs ahead of people, because that just seems like such an abuse of power. And last time I checked, politicians are not getting checked into boards every other day. So I think that that's a huge problem, because as politicians, you're supposed to be representing a population and not necessarily, you're supposed to exemplify the rules, not be exceptions to them. So,
yeah, it's interesting. Sorry, you bring up some good points. It's interesting, Morgan, because it's like there's no easy way to just sort of sit down and go, this is preferential treatment, given what they do. Now, a lot of people who aren't sports fans, I understand the issue of it. I don't have a problem with it, because I think we're talking about 22 players throughout the course of a year at most. And I mean, the Bombers have 54, 60. But I agree with other people getting to jump in line. I think it should be based on a case of severity. And I think that's the way it should be based. Unfortunately, that's the way, as you started this, things don't work that way. I really don't like preferential treatment in life, but I can't imagine if October 30th, Brian Little hurts his knee and he's got to wait 6 months.
Oh yeah, he wouldn't have come back at all this year. So
it's an interesting topic for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Great call, Morgan. Thanks so very much.
Yeah, we appreciate the insight and you listening. Darren,
I think the majority, certainly in our universe here with the sports world, that the vast majority will sort of side with Morgan there. We're understanding for the athletes because it's near and dear to our hearts, but the others outside of that, there's going to be some pretty good blowback with that.
And I mentioned my case, which was years ago, which it didn't affect my work, so I could just wait, where other people have tweeted me that it did affect my work and I had to go on compensation or disability for months.
If a guy or girl's working construction, that's obviously imperative for their work.
And it's less pay because you're on disability. Yeah. It's not your full salary, so I understand that. Whereas, you know, an athlete is still getting his check, injured or not, full pay. It's interesting. Boss Pizza Fan Line 780-1290. Darren, you're on the program. Go ahead. Hi, Darren. Darren, are you still there? We've lost Darren. Let's go to Mike. Mike, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hi. I give Patrick Laine a B+. And basically, it's his defensive play. I mean, offensively, I had him pegged at around 30 goals. I thought he would be a 30-goal scorer, so he matched my expectations there. But his defensive play, I've got him as a B+.
Okay, we appreciate
it. Now my question to you guys is, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff right now and you're looking for a bridge goalie, would you look at Ryan Miller for 2 years if he wanted to play?
I you know, it's interesting because we throw all these names out there. I haven't actually sat down and put a list in order. He would be a guy I would put on a list with, I guess, a guy I would come in to augment, whether he wanted to do that or not. But I don't know if I would go after him hard. Like, I wouldn't have him say, of the goalies available through free agency, not just trade, but just through free agency, I would maybe put him outside the 8 to 10.
Well, because I think if you're looking at any goalie that's in the free agency position, I think Ryan Miller is the only guy that would want to come in and maybe play for a year or two and sign a contract.
Bernier's
28, Mason's 28, Elliott's 32.
That's a fair point that you're making from a...
They're going to want 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Ryan Miller at 36, still with a 914 save percent, and a 2.8 goals against average on a team that only scored, I think it was 170 goals, when the Jets scored 240. You give him 40, you give him 70 more goals, that's pretty much a goal a game more. He might be a guy, if he wanted like a one-year contract, you could, you know. And the only reason I'm saying that is the Jets had the lowest cap or spending on goaltenders in the entire league. They only spent $1.9 million on their starting goaltending.
Well, they did have to pay Andrei Pavlik. That was on the books. Just because he wasn't here, they still had to pay Andrei's $4 million.
I like your point, though, when you're talking about trying to grab somebody for 2 years And if you've got any sort of level of interest and if youth, you're not going to be interested in that. And with Ryan Miller's age at, you know, turning 37 in July and still kicking out something in and around a 915 over the last 3 years, it's a very intriguing point you make.
Yeah, we appreciate the call, Mike. Yeah, I don't know. Like it, and Ryan Miller only wants to play in the West Coast. His wife's an actress in L.A., and they like that. Like, he's had some offers before he even went to Vancouver to play out east, and I think he actually turned down more money just to be on the West Coast. So I don't know if he'd come, but I would throw him into the pool for sure. I mean, I think that that's a veteran guy that could get you some wins and also help with Connor Hellebuck.
Meh.
And there's just so many dudes out there. There's so many guys out there, and you would like to think that the Jets are going to be aggressive enough to land someone who's a little bit more sexy as far as coming in with a bit of a splash and to solidify the situation, maybe more so than Miller. But the fact is, if you're looking for a two-year contract, that's where the point that he was making with Miller stands out a lot.
I would rather get a Mike Condon for 2 years, and but I think he would...
Mm.
Like, is Condon going to want to start?
No. Well, he's not going to get a...
I mean, he's not going to get a starting job.
But, like, the thing is, if you're talking about Bishop, Darling, Mason, Bernier, four guys that, sure, you can want 3, 4, 5 years, they're not all getting it.
No.
Like, they're not all going to be able to get it. So that comes back to the whole, how patient can Chevy be and how patient will he be? Because you could potentially get the best deal out of all the goalies on the market by waiting late. Mm-hmm. But then you could also be stuck with, you know, somebody you don't really feel totally comfortable with because every other team pounced on these guys.
And because it's Winnipeg, I don't think you can be patient. I think you have to pick 2 to 3 guys and be aggressive and go at them. I don't think you can wait to see how things play out.
The only thing I'd counter that with is that there's a lot more goalies than there are spots sort of for people looking for goal. You know, like the supply and demand here, it's the buyer's market here, not the seller. So in that way, the Jets can afford to be patient because there's so much talent out there.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to be patient and lose maybe the 3 guys that you seriously want. You know what I mean? Like, say they sit down and they look at, like, what Kevin Woodley was saying on HNL a couple weeks ago, just the whole, you know, what kind of shots they give up, what kind of team they are, what kind of system they play, and go figure out a goalie who's good in those situations. I think they have to be aggressive, A, because it's Winnipeg, so you have to get some money out there right away. And I think it's also just to get the guy you may want. I know there'll be guys available, but if you want a certain 2 or 3 guys, I do think you have to be aggressive. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Well, let's get to Mark after the break.
Mark after the break. Mark, you're on. You're in the queue on the big show, 780-1290, TSN. Go ahead.
I was wondering after the break where that country was that he came from to have such a name. Mark after the break.
We'll get better, I promise you, on The Big Show. TSN 1290 next.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big shout out to Andy Ruwicki and all the great guys and gals at the Selkirk Chrysler. After 40 fantastic years in the business, Andy Ruwicki is calling it quits, heading to retirement, saying goodbye, invites you into Selkirk Chrysler to pick any vehicle you want for dealer invoice price. For more information, go to SelkirkChrysler.com. Selkirk Chrysler, just a slap shot north of Winnipeg.
And pick up your official TSN 1290 discount golf card today. Hit the greens throughout the summer with great 2-for-1 deals at a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including Granite Hills Golf Club, Winkler Centennial Golf Course, Carmen Golf Club, Lavarande Golf Course, and the Steinbeck Flying Golf Club, amongst many others. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card and for a complete list of participating courses, visit tsn1290.ca. And if you're looking for the link, you go to tsn1290.ca. At the right-hand side top corner, there's a More drop-down. You click on that, and it's right there.
Have you ever been to Granite Hills?
Yes.
Dude, no. It is.
I've had 2 opportunities.
Outrageously beautiful. Yeah. It looks like it's 200 years old, and I don't think it's 20 years old.
Yeah.
Gorgeous course. Mind-blowingly gorgeous. Like, as Canadian as you get in a golf course. It's just beautiful.
Sounds like a trip.
Sounds like a 120, I tell you that. Bring a lot of balls, baby.
Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Mark, you're on the program. Go ahead. Hi, Mark. We lost Mark. Sorry, Mark. If you want to call back, please do so. Jeremy, you're on the big show. Go ahead. No Jeremy. Strike two.
What's going on, man?
We'll go to Scott. Scott, you're on the big show. Go ahead.
Oh, hey, guys. It's Scott from Bridgewater. I just wanted to say thanks a lot for listening to you guys every day. I'm from Vancouver. I moved here 6 years ago, and you guys get an A-plus for a grade. You guys do a great job every morning. So
thanks so much,
for that.
Man.
But I was calling today more concerned. I've never called into a program like this, but when I hear people sort of grading Liney at a B-plus, or B-plus, I suppose, I'm just wondering, like, expectation-wise, what people were sort of thinking. Like, I mean, the guy scores almost 64 for the year, of which 36 goals. I mean, for an 18-year-old, I mean, that is, to me, an A-plus for sure. I don't even know if you can look at it any other way. So, I'm just, you know, I guess when I was driving down the road, I was hearing this. I was like, wow, that's, like, I don't know what people were expecting for that. So, anyway, that's my point. I
think we agree with you, Scott. Sure. Wicks and I do.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks a lot, guys. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Scott.
Thanks for listening, man.
I just grade the overall game, not just the offense. So that's where I went with that. Boss,
I like that. That was a bit of a shot there.
That's a shot.
What?
Grading the overall game. You think we're just idiots grading his offense?
No, I just, well,
that's what you're implying.
I don't think he's without flaws as an 18-year-old. I don't think he doesn't have things he needs to improve on, and I don't think that I'm not comparing him to Blake Wheeler, but I'm comparing him to the grades I gave out as an A, and I think, you know, all his struggles are because of his youth. I get that, but just because he's young doesn't mean we can ignore the struggles. There were some parts of his game that got better throughout the season, and if I look at the first 3 months of the season, they did get better after that, but the first 3 months is part of the season.
Offensively, as an 18-year-old, his grade is something beyond an A+. It's A++.
If you're asking me for a grade on his offense, it's an A.
An A? No. That's crazy talk right there, brother. If you're saying an 18-year-old, first year in the league, with 36 goals and
well,
the
an
points.
Well, A+, then. If you're asking me just to grade his offense,
yeah, it's
I'll
like,
agree with
it's
you
like,
guys.
It's worthy of 100%, probably, like if you're talking hardcore percentage things here. And then defensively, yeah, there's some improvement there. But also keeping in mind, and I think there's a little bit of a different scope here, possibility to how people are grading. If you take the best player in the NHL, Sid Crosby, and grade forwards off of him, maybe, because you need a standard sort of thing, and if he's 100%, for instance, then you start applying grades to him. Or if you take a player and along the lines of, say, a Mark Stewart. What did I expect from Mark Stewart? This is what I expected from him. What did he end up doing this year? This is his grade. So those are sort of two different ways to grade, and I think Wicks and I are doing the second one, and you're doing the first one.
Yeah, I'm grading his season overall.
So are we, though. But it depends on where you're – what's your base? What are you starting – even if you want to start with the Jets, I'm going to use Blake Wheeler as my example, and I'm going to grade off of him and the weaknesses and detract, or do you want to start with what were your expectations of this player and how much did he supersede them or fall short from them sort of thing? Depends on how you're grading.
Well, here's Ryan on Twitter. Go home, Jim Toth Sports. You're drunk. How does Wheeler get an A and Line A get a B? It's a B+, first of all. And as I said, like, let's just do this. Defensively, is Patrick Line A as good as Blake Wheeler or Brian Little? Whom I gave A's to.
But that's what we're talking about. That's where we're saying we're not comparing him to that. We're saying, you know, because you're talking about working off of a base, a foundation for your grade there.
Okay,
What do you expect from an 18-year-old coming into the NHL? What were your expectations? And that's what we're working on.
Okay,
even defensively, stronger than a lot of people probably thought.
Let's talk about his defensive game. Is it an A?
No. No, but as an 18-year-old,
so offensively, I give him an A or an A+. Defensively, probably a B-. You wrap it all in together, it's a B+.
But his defensive game for an 18-year-old may well be an A.
So
his defensive game for him coming into the NHL is as an 18-year-old. We heard Paul Maurice reference it all year long, how far ahead of the game he is in that manner because of where he came out of playing hockey.
We ran a clip from Paul Maurice yesterday on H&L with Hustler, and he literally said his last 2 or 3 months he really came around. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I have several items this year where he needed to be better defensively, and he wasn't. And he learned that, and I give him full credit for that. And his game overall the last 2 months of the season really came around for me. I really liked it. But it just it was the whole season combined, when I look at it all, isn't an A+. But we'll get to the Boston Pizza fan line and get your thoughts on that and much more that we're talking about today. Danny, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hi. I just want to know if you guys think, what if the Jets don't go after a goalie? Where would that leave us for next season?
It would most likely leave you with the same situation they ended with Connor Hellebuck and Michael Hutchinson.
Mm-hmm. And will we be in the same position we are now?
I expect Connor Hellebuck to be a little bit better. I would think Michael Hutchinson wouldn't be as bad as he was, but I don't know if it's enough to get you into the playoffs.
I thought about what you're asking, and I think it's a fantastic question, right? Michael Hutchinson, could he have the level of struggle? You saw in his last 7 or 8 starts, played at a pretty nice level. I think he's better than what his numbers were this year. The reason why I don't think they do that, Danny, because I think it's just in such a critical season here for Paul Maurice and even for Kevin Cheveldayoff. If they make that decision, they can be crucified at the end of next season if it fails.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
But I do think it's a great question, because I expect Hellebuck to be better, and I think Hutch just had a real bad early start to the season.
Kevin LaValle on Twitter, what were you doing at 18, Jim? Hashtag Jim hates kids.
The Jim hates kids thing is hot right now.
Like, this is the thing. This is what I hear the defense of him for all his or some of his flaws in his game is because he's 18. That doesn't mean they're not there.
No, we know.
Just because they're 18, it doesn't mean that they're not there, and that's why I give him a B+.
How about using this as a baseline if you're going to use something to grade off of? Take the average 18-year-old coming into the league. Even compare Patrick Laine to Nikolaj Ehlers, for instance, as a young player. Like, compare to Nikolaj Ehlers, who had some remarkable down or struggles defensively. Patrick Laine, in a general sense, for a young player, an 18-year-old player in the league, was phenomenal defensively. He wasn't always in the right place or anything like that, but not very often did you see him lazy or unaware of things defensively.
He was lazy in a couple plays the first couple months. He was no different than Nick Ehlers.
Yeah, but see, making mistakes doesn't necessarily mean you're a poor defensive player, because there's going to be mistakes made by every guy.
I understand that.
For me, where would you rank his rookie season in history?
In history, yeah.
As an 18-year-old rookie season, where does he rank historically? Just probably top 10. Is that fair to say?
Not probably.
Okay, so we're talking minimum top 10. If you have one of the top 10 best seasons in your age group in the entire history of the sport, can't that at least start at an A and probably just finish out as an A+?
But it's a different era, because then you got to do the same for Austin Matthews, and you got to do the same for Mitch Marner, and you got to do the
same. But they're not 18.
Yeah, they were never 18.
For
man.
Eric Rowinski. As
Zach.
Rookies.
But Zach.
See,
but
this
they weren't
is my
18.
Point. You guys keep putting the age in there as if that, like, he's a rookie in the league.
You got to weigh the age, I think,
I understand,
JT.
But with the age comes deficiencies in his game. And to ignore those deficiencies just because he's 18.
But we're not ignoring them. We are.
Well, then include them in the grade.
Well, we're including them in our understanding of what we expected from an 18-year-old and then posting the grade off of those expectations.
Louis, you're on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I want to touch on that MRI thing. Though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Wouldn't you think these organizations have an MRI machine of their own?
That's an interesting question to ask.
Most teams in the States, when you're talking about other, and not all do, but like I think the National Football League, every team has their own MRI. I'm not sure on that, but I think most of them do. But a lot of teams don't. And then, it's a massive expense. And people always say that to me, well, if they're $3 million, why don't you just go buy one? Well, then you have to man them, too. And yet, if you're getting 7 MRIs a year, you're actually paying a full-time doctor to do MRIs 7
times. Which at that point in time, you become a private clinic of sorts. And I don't know what the rules and regulations as things exist in this country
Some
and province
have
specifically
this on Twitter too,
as like, to whether or not you can have, like, until the government allows that to happen, I don't know if the team, for instance, could have its own MRI.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either.
Which could be a massive sticky point.
And if you're, realistically too, if you're Mark Chipman and your guys are getting MRIs for free.
Why would
like
you?
Free-ish. Like, why pony up? You know what I mean? Like, save yourself the dough.
Yeah, no, I do believe, and it's in a report that I saw through CBC. I'm quite sure, I'm just trying to see it again, but I'm quite sure I read that they do pay additional costs for something.
I would imagine it's to get in that soon. Anything else, Louis? Good point, but I know some pro teams that have massive amounts. Like the Dallas Cowboys have their own MRI machine, I would presume.
Yeah, just that my chiropractor, the guy, he wants to get one, and he can get one.
Yeah, that's right.
You can get one.
A chiropractor can get one. I'm pretty sure these organizations can get one and be there at the ready.
But do you understand my point that the chiropractor wants to get one because he's going to make money on it? Like he's going to actually get some MRI people and be very busy with it?
A year or two to get his money back, but after that, the money's his now.
Yeah, that's what I mean, where the Jets are going to use it maybe seven times a year.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't matter. If you're the Jets,
very, very, very easy, man. You know what I'm saying?
We're hearing this a lot. Why don't – because some pro teams do have their own MRI machine.
But I wonder if your chiropractor is truly allowed to. Because at that point – because that's a private – clinic, right? I think there's a little bit more red tape involved than maybe what most in us are aware of. You can't just open up your own clinic.
Well,
I
don't know. Sorry, who's next on the Boss Pizza fan line? 780-1290?
Yeah, we'll get Harry to hold on, but let's go to Derek now.
Harry, you hang on. Derek, you're on the big show. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
The goalie situation, what if we looked at it a different way and we went after a Corey Schneider, someone who has 5 years remaining, who's one of the top goaltenders in the league, solidifies our goaltending for 5 years. We move out Hellebuyck at that time, we would have to. We let Comrie groom underneath Schneider for 5 years. And then this team now becomes not just a consistent playoff team, but could become a Stanley Cup contender within these 5 years. And the reason I'm mentioning Schneider is because it just came out a little while ago how we were one of the least desirable teams that NHL hockey players want to come to. And there's possibly Corey Schneider would bring some of these bottom six forwards, veterans that this team needs. And we could be a force for the 5 years with them and have Comrie grooming underneath that. Like right now we're looking at, let's get somebody for 2 years and then hopefully Hellebuyck or Comrie will take the reins after that, and we're waiting on hope where there's a goaltender out there that can be pried out of New Jersey.
Why if you're the Devils, why do you let your best player go?
Yeah, why does everybody think they can pry him out of there?
I think because the Devils are probably 3 to 4 years away from being decent when you talk about their prospect pool basically involving Pavel Zacha and nothing else. So if you're gonna make that move, now would be the perfect time because you get value for him.
He does have a no trade clause.
So I don't even know if the Winnipeg thing is possible, but I could 100% understand the Devils making the move for Schneider now. If you can get value for him, because once they're gonna be good, if you would assume that's 3 to 4 years from now, he's what, 35, 36 at that point.
Yeah, he's
like all Schneider's doing is keeping you from the complete bottom of the NHL, where maybe. Mm-hmm. You kind of want to be if you're New Jersey.
That would be one heck of a move. I tell you what, this fan base, Jets Nation, would ignite with excitement if that move were to ever be made.
I don't think Ray Shero thinks they're 3 to 4 years away. I think thinks they're 2 years away. But yeah, I don't know. I know Corey Schneider still loves Winnipeg, still has a lot of friends here, but I also know that he's set up in New Jersey. Him and his wife are so heavily involved in that community, and they've started like a dog rescue thing there. And he's an American player. I don't know if he wants to leave the New York area to come back to Winnipeg when he's pretty well set up. Unless it comes down to winning, maybe you could get him out of there. But
brother,
the other aspect of that, though, guys, is the Jets honestly believe they have like some good goalies. They're just not ready or as ready as they hoped in Hellebuyck, and they believe in Eric Comrie.
Well, sure they do, you solve your situation right there. You want to make one heck of a statement and put things in line with this team as it surges and all these salary cap issues, concerns upcoming over the next X number of years and knowing you can't keep this group together forever. boy, do you ever solve the most glaring situation since the return of Jets 2.0 for the next 5 years if you can get Corey Schneider. And I say this, brother, if you think Cheryl thinks the Devils are 2 years away, they're closer to winning the number one pick in 2 years or finishing dead last in the league than they are turning things around with 70 points this year.
Thanks for the call, Derek. Harry, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I just wanted to rate Mr. Lyon, since everybody's doing it. I'll give him an A. He had a very good year and all that, but what I'm looking forward to is how much the guy's going to improve. The way he skates like a robot. He's like, everybody look at me. I'm in the NHL. I'm skating. He hasn't got that intensity, that quickness yet. He might be fast, but he's not quick. And he's got so much to improve yet, which is very encouraging. And also his shot. How many times? He's got a super shot. That's what makes him famous. But how many times did he whiff this year? I mean, a guy that he can improve on that. Simple as that.
Yeah, trust me. When I give him a B plus, I'm not any indication that I'm not, you know, maybe even a season away from giving him an A for years and years and years in a row. But I understand all the aspects of it. Been over it or over it. I think he's a B plus this year. Very good season. Very dynamic player. Going to be a superstar in this league.
He ain't never good. I don't know what you want him turning into Zuccarello. I mean, you know, he's fast. We all know that, right? It surprised a lot of people at the All-Star with regard to fast, but he's also tall as heck, right? So he's not ever going to look or appear fast or have that element in his game. And the whiffing on shots, how many times did he whiff on shots? Pardon?
Harry? Harry's gone. We got to take a break anyways. We appreciate the call, Harry, and we'll get to more of yours on the Boss Pizza Fan Line on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290. People Magazine has named Julia Roberts the world's most beautiful woman for a fifth time.
What?
I give her a B+.
That's a bit of a little surprising, isn't it?
Just saw it on the headlines. Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Yeah, Ralph, you're on the program. Go ahead. Hi, Ralph. We lost Ralph.
Oh, no. Oh. Well, let's get to Norm. Then.
There you go. A little curve in your stick. You hang onto the puck better, Ralphie.
Norm, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
That's some beauty feedback right there, man.
Hi, Norm. You want to turn that down a bit?
Hello. Hello. You're
freaking us out, dude.
I think we lost Norm to the Twilight Zone.
Dude.
Thanks
enjoy
for
the
calling.
Other side, man.
Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. If anybody else wants to weigh in on a grade for Line A, your thoughts on the MRI athletes jumping the queue, and Aaron Hernandez commits suicide in prison. Also, the NHL playoffs. Let's get back into those tonight, gentlemen. Two elimination games. Minnesota stay alive tonight? Yay or nay?
Yay.
Sticking with my prediction of forcing a game seven before Boudreaux gets his heart broken again.
I am surprised hearing some of the people say, they're falling off, tailing off the end of the season, blah, blah, blah. They've been dominating the series, and it just...
Didn't they win, like, five games in a row to close out the year,
too? Four, I believe, yeah.
So, like, I understand they had the slump and everything, but they kind of, I thought, turned it around at the end.
Yeah, I believe they had five in a row, but they only won seven of their last 20.
But
so they did
dominating
the
series.
They turned it on, but... Calgary Flames stay alive tonight, yay or nay?
They stay alive so that they lose 29 in a row next game.
I do like that. I think they lose, though. I mean, this has just been a brutal series for them all around.
Yeah, I don't know how they – it wouldn't surprise me if they staved off elimination, but I don't know how you get up off the mat after that Game 3 loss in the fashion which you lost it. Elsewhere tonight in the National Hockey League, amongst the four games, Senators and Bruins.
Sens pulled it off. Eric Karlsson's a god.
Yeah, and this is just slowly turning into the Eric Karlsson postseason.
Yeah, it truly is. Series.
I give Eric Karlsson an A, if anybody cares about that. I got the Bruins even in this series tonight. And the game you'll hear right here on TSN 1290, 6 o'clock, Game 4 between the Leafs and the Capitals. Do the Leafs go up 3-1, or do the Capitals tie the series at 2?
Kids, get ready, baby. They're going to shock the world again tonight. The Kids are going up 3-1.
I just refuse to live in a world where the Leafs can possibly go up 3-1 against. I just can't. I refuse to believe it'll happen. I'll take Washington with an empty netter.
I got Washington beating this one too. No overtime tonight, and I'm still bitter.
Because you hate kids, that's why you hate the Leafs.
I don't hate kids. Laine's got his own job. He makes his own money. He's contributing to society. I like the guy. Happy birthday, Patrick Laine, 19.
Yeah. Happy birthday. Here's a B plus.
A B plus, kid.
What? I was going to be mean. This guy on Twitter said, what were you doing at 18? And I was going to say something about the own goal, but not as much as Patrick Laine is. Outstanding player. I really look forward to this. And we've talked about this before, but not only next year on how much better he's going to be, but when he's 24, 25, 18 to 20 more pounds.
Hard to imagine, isn't it?
Oh, it's just going to be a dynamic player. Tonight's referendum at 5:15 with Hustler and Lawless. Gary Lawless will be back with Andrew Patterson. Is Mr. Kevin Cheveldayoff. Rick Ralph will have your next chance to qualify for the Ultimate Canadian Sports Tour at 12:15, H&L at 5:15. And I have two tickets to the Rady JCC 45th Sports Dinner Wednesday, May the 10th at RBC Convention Center. To the 12th caller through right now, guest speaker Timu Salani. 12th caller through. We'll be back to break it all down for you once again tomorrow at 6 a.m. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening. We thank you for the calls and tweets. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow at 6 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca.